This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
You are listening to the longest running weekly episodic comic book podcast in all Place to Be Nation.
Broadcasting from the state-of-the-art L-shaped studios at beautiful and serene Hoholoon Plaza in Vancouver, British Columbia. Greg Phillips and Nick Toomer are the Hard Traveling Fanhounds.
Hard Traveling Fanboys! 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 Hard Traveling Fanboys!
When you hear this... Place to Be Nation Pop. Welcome. Welcome to what is the second half of what we have deemed quite possibly the nerdiest exercise any human being can engage in. That's right. We're back here to bring to you the results of the third biennial Peter David Memorial Place to Be Nation Pop Fantasy Comics Draft presented by a hypothetical, non-rotational DC Comics online unlimited subscription service. I, of course, am Nick Duke, one half of the Hard Traveling Fanboys, as this is a special edition of the Hard Traveling Fanboys giant size. With me, as always, is my compatriot, Greg Phillips.
Yes, I am here, Nick. I am alive, I am alert, and I am ready.
I could tell how alert you were based on that lag in between my introduction of you and you speaking, so that was good. For those of you who are uninitiated, a little while back we engaged in our third biennial Fantasy Comics Draft, as I just said. And about a month later, I don't know, a month, 6 weeks later, something like that, we dropped onto PlaceToBeNation.com the resulting written pitches. Each member of the draft was tasked with putting together between 12 and 15 pitches for their own fake comic book company, well, along with associated creators and characters that would be involved in those titles, and writing those out for you there. What we then did is solicited votes, pull lists of between 12 and 15 titles from whoever throughout Place to Be Nation wanted to submit a title, a pull list. And what we wound up with was 25 ballots, 25 pull lists. We would have had a 26th, but somebody, when attempting to make the Fantasy Comics Draft great again, did not read the rules clearly. So that ballot was discounted. In any event, what we're going to do here today is we're going to have each of our participants on, and we're going to have a little roundtable session. We're going to talk about their pitches, their approach to this thing, and we're just going to kind of open it up to questions. We're not going to go through title by title into the minutia, as much as some might like to do that, but we are going to hit the high points and kind of get a feel of what everybody thought about each other's drafts. So without any further ado, let me introduce you to the rest of our panel. So you've already heard from Greg, who will, of course, be representing Quite Frankly Comics. Isn't that right, Greg? You did leave your comics company name the same this year, right? Thrilling. And, of course, we're also being joined by Jennifer Smith, who this year brought to us Roxy Comics.
First of all, Jennifer, I would like to apologize for having muted my microphone accidentally, but I would like to say that I don't know what my comic book company was called last time, except that I know that it's now called Quite Frankly. Jennifer?
Hi, yes. And mine is called Roxy Comics, and so, whatever.
Of course, also joining us, the manager himself, Todd Weber, with Synchronicity Comics.
Yes, that's a word I can't even say, I can't even pronounce, but...
Yeah, I wasn't sure I was saying it correct either, but I was giving it the old college try. Outstanding. Also joining us, Russell Sellers with Grimdark Comics. Russell, how are you tonight?
Oh, I'm ready to talk about some GD comics. Go on, get you some.
Well, there you are.
Yes.
Of course, we were also joined by a newcomer to the Fantasy Comics Draft, representing Kid Rando Comics, Mitch Oaken.
I'd like to blame the following people and places. Oh, wait, are we not at that part yet?
We are not to that juncture yet.
I'm ready to start blaming things.
Outstanding. And, of course, rounding out our Sinister Six, representing everything you see and everything you don't comics, Tim Capel.
Yes, thank you for the prestigious and credit, Nick. I'm looking forward to getting into this. I'm very intrigued by where the night is going to lead us. And representing everything you see and everything you don't, comics, were the third draft. It will never change. That's the brand, and I'm sticking behind my brand.
Outstanding to hear. So as I said, we're going to go through and have a little roundtable on each company. And so we're going to start here tonight in the same place that you started if you were to read the fantasy pitches. We're going to start with page one, which was Jennifer and Roxy Comics. So Jennifer, kind of just give us a little opening statement here. What was your approach to the process? How did you find it being, you know, your first time participating? What did you think of of your effort when it came to the written pitches?
All right. So I was proud of my draft picks to begin with. There were a couple of bumps along the way, usually your fault. So when I got down to writing the pitches, I found myself at a little bit of a disadvantage because, unlike you guys have years and years of, like, comics knowledge and, you know, the continuity, and I don't. So I found Wikipedia to be my best friend in this process. But along the way, I got to learn a lot about these characters that I did not know a lot about. I enjoyed that quite a bit. And as far as crafting my books, I tried to put some unconventional creators together, like Marguerite Bennett and Jason Fabok, which I think is an odd pairing that would somehow work for me. And then I tried to do things like Jeff Johns, who I think does a good job at kind of like reinventing characters. So I tried to put him on books that were had a little bit of obscure characters, if that makes sense, like Cloak and Dagger and Green Hornet. So
Green Hornet, you say?
Right. Yes, I do say.
Yeah. Oh, what was who is the Green Hornet? Tell me more about that character.
No, it doesn't matter at this point. But anyway, so
it really, really doesn't.
I don't know that strategy worked out. We'll see, I guess. But I did enjoy it. I you know, a lot of the ones I put a lot of effort into, others not so much. But I think I'm not alone in the panel when it comes to that.
There will be somebody else we will get to with that.
Right.
So if your opening statement has concluded,
it has.
I'm just going to say real quick off the top, just go ahead and let you know, I'm not going to give you any numbers because I don't want to spoil anything for later in the podcast when we get to the results, but I just want to let everybody know Jennifer's top titles, her top three books in no particular order in terms of polls, were Cloak and Dagger Separation, Detective Comics Sleepless, and Lantern's Lust. Her least polled title was Ant-Man and the Wasp. So with that being said, we're actually going to open it up with questions, but we're going to start. You're actually the only person who, in my email, I got a question from a voter. So the voter, Frank Fran, Mike on Twitter, at FrankFran29, as he was pulling Imperious Sex, wants to know, what the hell is wrong with
Wait, Jennifer? Wait, just a minute.
I want you to repeat that sentence, because it may be the only other time I get to hear it. As he was pulling.
As he was pulling Imperious Sex,
Very good.
He wrote, what the hell is wrong with you, Jay Smith? So, in regards to Imperious Sex, what the hell is wrong with you, Jay Smith?
Well, like I said, I was doing a deep dive into Namor the Submariner on Wiki. So I was reading about him and being bored because it sucked. And I was in also a group chat with you guys at that point, and I just had like just a random thought, like, this sounds like Namor the Submissive. And I thought, well, shit, that's an idea. And then we all kind of talked about it a little bit, and it sparked a little bit more ideas. In conclusion, I don't know what the fuck is wrong with me, but, you know, sorry about it.
I was going to ask if we could mention the collaborative efforts that required, I think, came up to be.
It wasn't collaborative. It was you guys, the conversation sparked an idea in my brain. So, and that
I
happened.
Think we were all very supportive of what the end result of this
absolutely
Well, I hope so.
I mean, even the photo here of Namor leaning mm-hmm. suggestively against a clam.
Well, Nick picked that one, so.
It's kudos to Nick for the
Is that the piece of art from Civil War? I can't remember.
I don't know.
Because, you know, Greg, when you and I reviewed Civil War the comic, we kept talking about how, like, Steve McNiven just gave Namor the biggest bulge you've ever seen. Like, he was the king of the Undersea Kingdom for a reason. I mean, just, like, he big dick energy all over the place for Namor.
Yeah, I may not get a chance to say this later, so God damn it, Mike.
Right?
Really?
Right.
Like, you're going to complain about the book as you put it on your pull list.
Right. That was kind of my exact question, too. He was saying what the hell is wrong. But
yeah, what is wrong with you, yeah, Mike, sir?
It could have been like a, what the hell is wrong with you? Why didn't you think of this sooner in your life?
mm-hmm. All right, so I wouldn't necessarily buy or pull this book. But I could completely buy in that Kevin Smith would write it this way.
Yes.
Absolutely.
Yes. That was another – because I had several, like, sex-themed books, and I could only use Kevin Smith twice, and I enjoy Kevin Smith and his the way that he approaches sex, if I can say it that way, in his writing and his work. So, yeah.
Say however the hell you want.
Right. So, I just thought that he would bring a lot of spice to that.
2018, Kevin Smith.
Mm-hmm. Well, the good news there is that if the book is terrible, it'll only come out once.
Well, yeah, as long as you never. Come once at least, I guess it's all right.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. It's all, Kevin, or sometimes Kevin, not at all.
It's well, it's going to look good if nothing else. It's drawn by Tony Daniels, so you're going to get some hot guys, no doubt. Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
Yes, I will say that Jennifer definitely took the conversation and ran with it. There's a lot of pieces in here, not to belittle the credit at all, because there are a lot of pieces here that are pure Jennifer, and it was brilliant, and I will certainly admit it was on my pull list as well.
Well, I am surprised by
likewise.
That.
Likewise.
With your drafting strategy, it seemed like you were going after all the insects. What'd you end up doing to tie them together?
I did nothing to tie them together. That was another strategy because I knew all you guys would do interconnected universes, and I did not want to do that because, like I said, I haven't read for as long as you guys have, and I know for me when I was a new reader, that is daunting, going into a whole, like, continuity and all these books tied together, and it's like, oh shit, you have to read this one to know what's going on in this one. So I decided to make them all separate and stand alone. I thought that might also help with pulls, because you wouldn't have to, you could just pick what you'd like.
Yeah, you didn't necessarily have to pull everything
right.
to get the full picture. I get what you're saying. Mm-hmm. So has anybody else got any questions for Jennifer?
Sure.
Any particular things? Just jump, no, feel free to jump right in.
I think I will, in fact.
Yes.
And follow up with such a statement as this. I thought that the Lantern's Lust was a particularly strong concept, Jennifer, and I was wondering, is this something that you've been thinking about in the real-life comics, the Jessica and Simon relationship, perhaps with Larfleeze joining in for a little menage a trois action, or was this something that was just sparked in your memory banks, or your mind, rather, by the draft itself?
No, I've been reading, I did read Jessica and Simon quite a bit, and I'm, you know, I like to ship people, and I did ship them, and I think they would be a cute couple. I think they work well together. And then, you know, Simon's
me
pretty
too.
Hot. Jessica's super hot. So, like, artistically, you could, you know, you can make that look real good. Mm-hmm. Larfleeze.
Yes, go on.
I just thought it would be funny. And, and in my mind, Larfleeze gets obsessed with Jessica's dildo and
see this is the kind of high quality stuff you just
this is what we need here
in the
right.
written pitches. You're getting that extra level of detail and nuance that really puts it over the top here in
the rest of us might as well go home after this. We can't even follow Jennifer's pitches at all.
Jenny, do you think that Larfleeze would be a selfish lover in this comic?
Probably yes, but But I could see Jessica doming him quite a bit, so...
So why, if Jessica is dominant, then why not hook her up with Namor the Submissive?
Well, that's not out of the question. I mean, that's down the line.
She's laying the foundations for later in her universe, years down the line. You can't say what might or might not happen.
Right. You have to see what happens with Jessica and Simon first.
Right.
Right.
Let it play out and see where it goes. Mm-hmm. Exactly. I have two questions for you, Jenny. All
right.
Insatiable Squirrel Girl, did you borrow or find inspiration from the Netflix original series, The Santa Clarita Diet?
Not initially.
Oh, really?
I was proud of that pitch because all of my other pitches mm-hmm. had the same like tone, and then that one was specific to Squirrel Girl because it read like a tweet, because that's what she does in her books. So I thought that was kind of like interesting. And no, I just thought like, what would happen if she was a cannibal? And like, because I've read some Squirrel Girl, and then reading her wiki, it's really weird. And she's like oddly powerful and has defeated a lot of like really powerful people that I did not know about. So I just thought like, you know, her relationships with the animals, what if she got the, like this unending hunger to eat them? And, like, how fucked up would that be?
How fucked up would that be?
Yeah, I have to admit that when I saw the title, The Insatiable Squirrel Girl, I was like, oh boy, here we go. Kudos to you for subverting expectations.
Right.
Yeah.
Absolutely. On second thought, that might have been better, but, you know.
Well,
Volume 2,
diversity is a good thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And there's just a natural joke there about how Squirrel Girl just can't get enough nuts. I mean, like, that's right itself.
And Jorge Jimenez, can you see him drawing her?
It's like, totally.
That's perfect. And Ben Percy writing her?
Well, I was going to say – oh, go ahead, Tim.
Well, it just sounds like a great horror comedy. Mm-hmm. And I noticed a few of us seem to look to perhaps the medium of television as our muse, at least speaking for myself. So I was just curious on that one.
I was going to say also, Jenny, you had several books that were my last cut downs when I was putting my finalized pull list together. Mm-hmm. And that was one of them because I thought the pitch was excellent. I thought it was really creative, really well written, funny. And then I also liked Michelangelo's Magic Mushroom Ride.
Mm-hmm. By the point. And see, there's a double entendre in that title as well. See, there's just all kinds of hidden meanings throughout here.
I thought it was very creative. I think it probably, I don't know if anybody else would agree, I think it was probably the most creative usage of a Ninja Turtles character, just because I would never have thought of this in a million years. Maybe it's just because my brain is wired differently, but this was so good, so funny. The only thing is, Ron Marz writing it.
Yeah. See, I was at the end, and I was like, where the shit am I going to put Ron Marz?
Yeah. Casey got fringed right away.
Right. And then I thought Jason Fabok drawing Michelangelo. Just like,
would buy that every day. Though.
Right?
This is why I agree with it, because Jason Fabok drawing Michelangelo, maybe not, but Jason Fabok drawing drug scenes?
Absolutely. Holy shit, that would be awesome.
I actually really enjoyed this pitch too, and I agree with what Greg was saying earlier, is that I think there's something to be said for who used their Ninja Turtle the best, for lack of a better term. Right. You know, and I think this was a good idea. And for me, believe it or not, it was despite the sex, actually. That was the one part that I almost drew away from it, because I just wanted to hear more about the drug part rather than the sex.
Right.
Maybe it's just
I was just going to say that we've all been saying what our favorite titles from Jenny were, but I'm curious, Jenny, looking back at all the pitches that you wrote, which one of these was your favorite?
Ooh.
Which one are you most proud of? Like, do you feel like you were being like you're at your creative peak?
I'm going to go with Squirrel Girl on that one.
Okay.
Because I think it was different than everything else that I wrote.
That or the Constantine one. That would be the one that I would point to. That was really cool and interesting. Like, I thought that was really different. And it was neat because, like, Todd told me that, like, you guys didn't talk at all during the process, so it's weird that you use the name of his company in your pitch for Constantine.
Yeah, I didn't even know that was the name of his company. Yeah. I was like, oh, shit.
No, that actually made it work even better because it was a very meta pitch.
You mean, oh, shit. Oh, shit.
Well, New Orleans. So, who is this Starkman Tony that you're referring to in the Squirrel Girl pitch?
Well, she, in her books, like, she will tweet at Tony. So that's why I was, you know.
So Tony's in your universe.
He's side implying that you used his character.
Well, I didn't. He's
side, not side.
I didn't use him at all. She, side you know, implied. Tweeted him.
Todd's throwing a challenge flag, it sounds like.
I have a couple.
She mentioned him, but he was not, you know.
I mean, I do notice that both Thanos and Dr. Doom are also in there, and I know Dr. Doom is taken by somebody. Not sure about Thanos. I believe he is also.
Confused JR noise.
Allegations of impropriety already. Only 20 minutes into this podcast. I'm surprised it took us this long.
Hang on. on a somewhat related note, my other question for Jenny was very simply, Weapon X rated. would you be up for an intercompany crossover with perhaps a title known as Wolverino?
Absolutely.
Okay, we'll get that going.
All right,
we'll talk offline.
We will.
We're going to get our own amalgam universe. That
and
will
see,
be
I was hoping to Weapon X rated. Do an intercompany crossover. It would be with R. Old, the way to Dusty Death.
that remains to be seen.
I think Weapon X may be the master of the Wolverine O.
There you go. Give a reason for the O.
There you go.
A Wolverine O face, yes.
Outstanding. All right, any other questions for Jenny before we move on?
I actually have one more for a different book we haven't mentioned yet, which is Cloak and Dagger Separation.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Have you been reading the Cloak and Dagger that's coming out, and the fact that they're trying to split apart affect what you were doing there at all?
No, I have not been reading it. I watched the TV show that they made, like 7 or 8 episodes of that. I actually haven't finished it. But then I had this idea about Doctor Strange and his cloak, or like his cape, somehow being interconnected with them. And then I fell into this dark hole of reading Doctor Strange history. It took like 2 hours. And I think there's a story there, but I just try to just allude to it in the pitch.
They have in the past done occasional, oh my god, Doctor Strange is messing with X forces things. I don't know if Dark Force has ever been one of them, but it is an interesting thing. Mm-hmm. And my other question because of it, which I believe I already know the answer is, but it is, I don't know if you realize, but Cloak and Dagger used to do a split book with Doctor Strange, whether there was any realization connecting those characters together.
I did not know.
Oh, very cool. I didn't know that either.
Mm-hmm. That was one of the iterations of Strange Tales.
Oh, okay.
Very cool. Yep. I love the creative team on that one, obviously. Mm-hmm. And then I thought the idea was really cool. Link them all together to form a dark passenger of sorts. Really good.
I would think you should have renamed the book Strange Tale, T-A-I-L.
Heyo.
That would have been a good story.
It's one of the few books she didn't put sex in, and you just had to do it.
There's
sex in that book.
But it's between Jeff Johns and Gary Frank.
Oh, man. Quite frankly.
All right. Well, do you have any regrets about your drafting?
That's a good question.
If you were going to draft again, would you do something differently?
Yeah, I would not do Ant-Man or the Wasp. But no. I liked my draft picks.
That was very close to a classic, no, Oh, wait.
Okay. That caught me off guard.
Ow. Was she a big, fat draft pick?
No, we will get to Fat Man the Flying Saucer, or Human Flying Saucer, in just a moment.
Jenny, remind me, did you draft Namor, or did you end up with Namor?
I ended up with him. Why the fuck would I draft that guy.
That's what I was going to say. Well, I can't remember.
Let me ask you this, Jenny. Do you think that if you had ended up with Aquaman instead of Namor, do you think you would have used him the same way? Figuratively speaking.
I probably wouldn't have had the idea, no. But now that you say that, I have lots of ideas.
Well. So that's a regret, but it couldn't be helped.
Right.
You know, Nick, that reminds me. You know what's coming up in December?
Aquaman month. Yes.
That's right.
I'm sure we will find a certain manager onto our airwaves several times during that month.
Absolutely.
But in any event, any other questions for Jenny before we move on? Hearing none, we're going to move on to the next member of our panel that you can find on page 2 of that article that was posted over at placetobenation.com. That, of course, being my podcasting compatriot, Greg Phillips, and Quite Frankly Comics. Greg, tell us a little bit about your approach to it. Just kind of give us an overview about your draft in general, or your pitches in general.
Well, as you can tell, I'm getting choked up just thinking about it. It means a lot to me. The last two drafts that we did, I had really, really coherent ideas going into the drafts. I had strategies. I knew who I wanted and why I wanted them, and I had grandiose ideas for storylines and characters and universes and what have you. This time around, while I loved the draft and loved the process, I had no ideas, absolutely none. I think I told you guys all this off the air repeatedly, but I was just having a hell of a time coming up with any concepts or ideas for this. And then I think the only one that came to me before crunch time but significantly was Sully's Angels, which I did at work because I was trying to distract myself. And I thought, how could I use Sully from Commando in a comic book? And so I did that, and I wrote it, and I was fine with it, I suppose. And then the weekend of the deadline that came, I sat down and I actually spent probably a good 7 to 8 hours like thinking up ideas and writing. And while I wasn't happy with all of my stuff, I was actually pretty surprised with how well things came together. And actually, the idea that kind of ended up being a linchpin of sorts was I had, when I first did the draft, I wrote down on my notes, which I have here, Lex as backer of Justice League, ? And that turned into the President Lex idea, which I then turned into the Pantheon book, and I think a couple other ones I make mention of it. Originally, there was an idea to involve the Black Widow, but I couldn't figure out how to do that while still using all my characters. So overall, it just kind of I wanted to have a little bit of something for everyone, which is always my approach to these things. I didn't want to have everything have the same tone or the same feel. I wanted to have some street-level stuff, some superhero team-up stuff, some classical hero stuff, some magic weird stuff that probably wouldn't even be for me in real life, and then and maybe a little bit of humor here and there. Primarily with the Deadpool book. I knew I was going to need humor for that. So I tried to diversify as much as I could and take nuggets of ideas and try to stretch them as much as I could. And I tried to assemble what I thought were good creative teams in case the pitches didn't turn out very good. Mm-hmm. So overall, that was my approach to it. It wasn't quite as planned out as my time has been in the past, but I mean, I think it turned out okay for throwing a lot of this together on the last day, and overall, I was relatively happy with it.
Outstanding. So before we open up to questions, just to let people know, again, in no particular order, Greg's top books that in terms of polls were Superman, Man of Tomorrow, BFFs, Thor, Goddess of Thunder, while his bottom books were Aquaman, King of Tides, and Future Force. So there you are. All right, guys, let's hear some questions for Greg. I did not get any "what the hell is wrong with you, Greg Phillips" questions in the midst of.
I have Alex Ross question. Is going to draw two books, right, Greg?
I knew the Todd Salt was coming.
In the Peter David universe, Alex Ross is quite efficient with his penmanship and paintmanship, I suppose.
Mm. Jim Lee as well.
Yes, Jim Lee, who is the also the – this is a little bit of insider information for all you guys. He's also the editor-in-chief of Quite Frankly Comics, and he has his time to do that and also to draw multiple books in a given month. So he's really stretching himself pretty thin here, but yet I find that he's putting out the best work of his career.
Well, I do think that Greg did the best job of all of us of doing that, though, of stretching the rules that we are allowed to do and put on artists and writers in spots where we say, okay, I might want this solely because of person A or person B. And he has, as I was saying in our chat, multiple people who get some pulls just for themselves, like an Alex Ross, you know, like a Jim Lee, and like a his favorite, Tom King, even probably got some pulls just by the name. But my question might be, regarding that BFF pitch, just how big is the check going to be for you, the use of Blue Beetle, and please tell me that it's not a Deadpool excuse.
Now, there's really an easy way of explaining this. Now, in the Peter David universe, copyright legislation is much looser than it is in our real world. So you see, the fact that I use the name Blue Beetle, I'm not actually using a person. As it says here, I am a blatant stand-in for a guy named Blue Beetle. Mm-hmm. No, but that could be anyone. That could be you know, Blue Joseph Beetle, a son of Gladys Beetle. Mm-hmm. You know, it could be anyone. Mm-hmm.
Jenny, are you taking notes? These are the answers you could have had for your previous question.
I don't answer to you, Mitch, but whatever.
Two companies, two blatant intercompany borrowings, for lack of a better term.
I would say references to characters is not, you know, stealing the characters.
These are outrageous accusations being
using
made.
Using the character to boost...
Oh, we did
it's
have
just
an interesting
reference.
Conversation.
It's just a reference.
In
the serious their past aspect of it. History.
Let me say, in regard to Todd's complaints.
I remember when there were
Todd's
enforced
complaints.
Rules for yes. this draft.
In regard to Todd's complaints that I've
when
heard
was
so
that?
Far. In
right.
regard to Todd's complaints, it is illegal to use somebody else's character. I don't know that it's necessarily illegal to make vague references to them. And also, Alex Ross and Jim Lee drawing two books, those are the rules.
Right. Okay. I was going to say, I think we had a seriously interesting conversation in the group chat as we were playing this, not only about the actual reference of characters and things like that, but what they bring with them and what it entails. Whether anybody used team names over and again, whether they used characters that weren't drafted, and who they belonged to. I know that I certainly ceded the use of Galactus to an owner.
Ceded
of
the use? Okay.
Well, in other words, I took mine out because I knew I agreed that it would be more appropriately used to the owner of Silver Surfer. And so I said, no, you know, you're right. I don't want to cause any confusion. You are more than welcome to do it. So I made up a name there. So there is levels of gray I would accept, absolutely.
I would say I did not. Statement. I chose not to use Blue Beetle. I merely referenced him.
Right.
You know, within the it's, you know,
it's more of a blue gray beetle.
And I would suggest I would suggest, quite frankly, that the listening audience will respond much more to positive companies like Roxy and Quite Frankly, who create a culture of caring. Companies that launch assaults at other companies.
Only time will tell. We will get to the results. We will see whose approach won over more readers. But we'll get there. We'll get there, Greg.
Tell us about your use of Leonardo.
So this was a great grand trick being played on me, because I think that Nick knows that Leonardo is my least favorite Ninja Turtles character and has been since I was however I was.
Yet he's the one most like you, Greg.
That's fair. I'll take that. I'll own that. He is a boring milquetoast character who has nothing interesting about him. So
he's got swords. That's pretty cool.
Swords. I have foam nunchucks. I bought at a fair one time.
Leonardo leads also. Don't forget that.
Yes, and Donatello has sex with machines. I'm aware.
Wait, what?
Oh, now who's slandering characters here?
I thought my headcanon was interesting.
So when I knew that I had a character that I didn't like particularly, my initial idea was to take AJ Lieberman who I was also given as part of Nick's picks, and apply AJ Lieberman to my least favorite character so that it could just be a shit sandwich, so to speak. But instead, I had this idea of, like, how am I going to use Jesse Custer in my universe? And my original idea to use him was stupid, so I burned it and never talked about it again. But I said, hey, Jesse Custer in Preacher hangs out with a bunch of freaks, like Arseface and, you know, others who I'm forgetting at this time, but mainly Arseface. So I thought, why not stick my two freak characters, Fat Man the Human Flying Saucer, who is his power apparently is that he's fat and he flies.
You drafted him!
I know. Oh, I wanted him. Again, I'll explain that in a moment. Leonardo, who is a mutant turtle, turned to life and is a ninja for some reason in this universe. He has a master, clearly. Splinter's not available to me, so Leonardo just taught himself how to be a ninja. So I said, how can I best use these two freaks? I'll put him with Jesse Custer, put him on the road running from God. I mean, what's a better idea than that? I don't know that I had one.
Why is Leonardo running from God?
Well, that's a good question. I'm glad you asked it. And clearly I thought
he's an abomination.
That's exactly right.
I should have been a vampire turtle.
So Fat Man hates God because he's fat.
and he's fat God. Because he hates God.
It's a vicious cycle. Leonardo hates God because he doesn't know why he couldn't have just been born a normal turtle. Why did he have to be turned into this mutant thing? For which I have no explanation because Shredder doesn't exist in this universe either. So Leonardo is pissed at God. And so Jesse Custer, who's also pissed at God, takes these guys on the run. He's not going to allow them to be taken out. Plus, they're hated and feared, like mutants that I can't mention because I didn't draft any except for Nightcrawler. So they're hated and feared by the average human, and they band together with their friend Jesse, the one man they've ever encountered that shows them kindness. And he takes them on the road, and they have adventures and buggering.
Buggering?
Well,
how does that work with a turtle?
I was going to say, if there's anybody who can handle it, it would be Garth Ennis, so he has the right writer.
Absolutely, absolutely.
And that's why it is the Preachist.
TurtleSex.gif.
The Preachist. And I'm also pitching this out to CBS for this fall. We'll see.
prime time pickup, I'm sure, is coming. I want to know about this Spider Twins pitch. Was the decision to put Mark Bagley on it solely to guarantee yourself at least a single pull for
me? Yeah, yes.
Okay, just making sure. It worked, for the record, but I was curious if that was your motivation.
Yeah, so that was all because, well, it was twofold. That was the main reason, because I know a lot of people love Ultimate Spider-Man and Mark Bagley's art on it. The other reason is that Mark Bagley draws Spider-Man really well. So I thought, you know, if there's any artist on my list that would be drawing this book, it had to be, I mean, I knew that when I came up with this pitch. I was like, I know I'm doing a Mark Bagley Spider-Man comic. Who's going to write it? And what's the pitch going to be, and how am I going to use Ben Reilly? And this idea was actually one of the first that came to me that day when I was writing all this. So I was like, I want a way to tie them both in together, and I thought it would be something that would, on some, it may not work in execution, but my thought was, okay, this would allow Peter Parker to have more of a normal life if he could split his time as Spider-Man with someone else. Likewise, it would allow Ben Reilly to have more of a regular life, and you know, and you could tell stories with, you know, Ben Reilly, whose regular life is during the day and his Spider-Man life is at night, versus Peter Parker, whose Spider-Man life is, or whichever one I went with, I don't even remember. I'm looking at it right now. It looks like Peter patrols during the day and he's off at night, so he can do, you know, family-related things. And Ben, he works at the opposite, exactly. So he can be a single, swinging, you know, whatever you want to say. So that was kind of the premise for that, and Tomasi was the fit for it because, well, I was trying to use him, and I thought he writes contemporary, 20 and 30-something people really well, so I thought it would be a good fit for him.
I appreciated your use of Peter Tomasi on a Spider-Man book. That's not something that I really even thought that I wanted until I read it, and then it clicked for me. As the, you know, big Spider-Man fan, I absolutely loved that pitch. So that was among my favorites of the draft. But
thanks, man.
I want to know which of the gimmick round characters that you were saddled with outside of Leonardo was the toughest for you to figure out how to use?
Oh, that's a great question. I'm trying to remember. Nick, do you remember offhand who my gimmick round draft picks were? I'm trying to remember.
No.
I'm looking at my...
Ben Riley, AJ
Ben Riley. Yeah,
AJ Lieberman, Leonardo, Lois Lane was one of your gimmick round selections.
That was
you switched to Lois Lane.
Yeah.
That was the easiest.
You got switched into AJ Lieberman.
AJ Lieberman was forced upon
you. Oh, yeah, no. You were switched into... Multiple magic characters, actually. Xantana and Dr. Fate, right?
Yes, that was actually a stroke of luck for me because I had nothing with... I don't know why I drafted the Spectre when I didn't have an idea for him except written and drawn by Bill Sienkiewicz, which was an idea that I had. But adding them in, I thought, made that pitch better. I think the one that I had the most trouble with, Russell, oddly enough, would probably be AJ Lieberman because... When I originally drafted Fat Man the Human Flying Saucer, I drafted him as a throwaway character so that I could just – I knew I had to use A.J. Lieberman. So I said, I'll just have A.J. Lieberman write this shitty character and be done with it. But then I ended up actually having an idea for Fat Man, and then I was like, well, God, what do I do now? So it was hard for me to come up with something some way to use him, and so I figured I'd just stick him on Sully's Angels, which is unlikely to get many votes anyway. So that was what I did with that one. But I think that was the hardest. And then in some ways, Zatanna, because it opened up more possibilities too. I wanted to use her on more team books than I did. I originally had her on Sisterhood of the Bat and took her out to stick her on, I believe, the Pantheon. Yeah. Because I felt like the Pantheon was going to be a sausage fest otherwise. So, yeah.
Yeah. I was just like looking over all of your pitches, and some of them are interconnected with each other very, very clearly.
Mm-hmm.
While others do seem like they could just exist out on their own, and even like your magical side of things kind of feels like those titles could coexist, and your Superman titles like include Planet, Pantheon, Citizen Lex, and even Amazing Spider Twins to a lesser degree. But was the idea to have all of these titles be interconnected, or did you kind of imagine them as like individual families and some of these just stand on their own? No real like steering towards big wide company crossover. What was the idea?
Yeah, the idea the idea behind that is that I wanted to have some books that stood on their own. So a book like BFFs or a book like I'm trying to think of another example here, Divine Occult. These are books that could very much, like you said, stand on their own. I wanted to have books like that because I thought that it would be a strategic advantage if I had some that tied together and some that didn't. So, because some people, you know, I knew some people would be limiting the number of titles they were pulling by nature. So I thought I might be able to make that work. And, the ones that were tied together, Superman, the Planet, the Pantheon, Citizen Lex, there may have been another one, the Spider Twins one sort of on the outside, and then I thought, oh, go ahead, sorry.
No, I was going to ask Black Panther because of the politics aspect.
Yes, Black Panther was going to be tied in that as well, and even Aquaman, King of Tides, was going to be tied into that. So all of those would be kind of like, I guess you would say, a family of titles. As you put it, so I did see those tying together and eventually leading to sort of all of these disparate threads playing out, where you've got Lex, who is seemingly benevolent, backing this Justice League stand-in group. Eventually, was going to be revealed that he was pulling the strings on some of these political maneuvers and basically trying to make a play for power worldwide. Mm-hmm. It was also going to lead. Black Adam was going to be a huge part of this with his interfering in Wakanda and things like that, and then Aquaman with his underwater kingdom and all that stuff being brought to the surface world. It was all going to eventually tie together with the ultimate revelation of Lex being the sort of big bad of this universe. But I also wanted to have enough out there that if people didn't dig the idea, that they could get into some other stuff.
Sure, and I really like your use of Tom King. For a guy that doesn't like Tom King all that much, you seem to kind of get him.
Plus one. I was going to say the exact same thing.
Thanks. I appreciate that because I've not the biggest Tom King fan in the world, as people may know about me, but when I drafted him because I know that my taste is not everyone's taste, and he's very popular, and a lot of people love him. He's very critically loved. I know almost everyone here at Place to Be Nation enjoys his work, so I have a grasp on what I think he does well, and so I thought he would do Citizen Lex really, really well, because I think he gets how to tell long form stories, obviously. And then Black Panther, I thought, because of his CIA experience, I think he understands the political machinations and maneuvering better than maybe any of the other writers that I had.
Absolutely. I wanted to make sure that I thought we would be remiss in not giving you kudos for the political aspects that you have in these books, like the Black Panther and the Aquaman book, and putting all those things together. I really liked the combination of Black Panther, Black Adam. It's one of those things, like other people have said before, I did not know I wanted until you put it together. It sounds great, and it's a really good combination.
Oh, thanks, man. Yeah, to me, I looked at it as they – I didn't think about it until I was actually writing them all down, and I was like, it just feels like they're polar opposites of monarchs, basically, where Black Panther is about – and compassion and progression, and Black Adam is sort of the opposite of that. He is about protecting his people at any and all costs, including the destruction of others. So, anyway.
All right.
Superman stars in two books, but he's kind of mentioned all throughout the line, it feels like.
He's mentioned in the Pantheon because he's not in the book. So it says, why isn't Superman? I put that in there because I wanted
to confront
the obvious question of why didn't you use Superman in your Justice League book? So I guess sort of linked. And then he's in, I don't know, is he mentioned again?
No, but the planet. He's not in the planet.
Right. Yes.
Which is kind of cool. You have Ben Reilly almost as a stand-in or as a Jimmy Olsen character.
Superman. I don't know what Superman's deal is with the planet. I didn't actually think that far through. So maybe he's just given up on being a reporter. Maybe he's on furlough right now.
The best compliment I can give you is that you had the draft that I wish I had. Mm. You know, when I look, level of balance between great writers, characters, and artists. I really coveted your draft.
Oh, man, thanks. Coveting is a sin, though, Todd.
Greg, what made you put the Punisher in Bloodhaven?
That was because I wanted to come up with a way to make it less generic. So I was like, I read it, and I was like, this could literally be any Punisher book that's ever been written. But I said, you know what? Let's just throw in a reference to Bloodhaven so people will know that it's not in Marvel's universe. So, plus, I think, you know, if you were going to do a crossover of universes, Bloodhaven is generally written to be the scummiest city in the DC universe, to my understanding. Like, it's often written, at least in the old continuity, it was written to be worse than Gotham, basically. Mm-hmm. So I thought it'd be the perfect place to put the Punisher, given that his whole deal is killing scummy people, so...
It's basically Hell's Kitchen if the 70s never ended.
Right. It's putting a Charles Bronson spin on the Punisher, maybe.
And it didn't matter what you wrote in that pitch. I was pulling it because of imagining Brubaker writing the Punisher.
Yeah, has he ever done that, by the way? I didn't even look that up when I did it. Does anyone know? Has he ever written
that? I don't think so.
Not on a regular basis, no. Maybe he's done one-off stuff, but I don't think he's done anything on a regular series. And I will say that this is more of a comment than a question. Punisher War Crimes was a book that it just missed the cutoff for me. I had it on my tentative pull list, but I really just admired the pitch from the first sentence, which I'll read to you. Frank Castle doesn't give a shit about politics, magic, or religion. You kind of have me at that point.
That may have been my most efficient line since whatever that one was I came up with Oliver Queen in the last one.
Yes, great economy of solicitation there, Greg. And now I do have a question for you. Getting back to the Pantheon, this, of course, your artist is Jim Lee, your writer, Kurt Busiek. How many years worth of Guy Gardner continuity do we need to know in order to follow this? Is it 36 or 37?
37.
You only need to know Guy Gardner's continuity from 1991 through 94, because it's going to be a very specific version of Guy Gardner that Kurt Busiek really, really likes, and he's going to write that version of him.
Okay, all right. Can't remember if I told it or not. I don't think I did.
It's the version with alien powers, for the record.
Oh, yeah. Guy Gardner Warrior?
Of course, of course.
Oh, man.
Voldarian.
See, now I'm kicking myself.
Sinestro's Ring, or after that?
I think post Sinestro's Ring, yeah.
Yep. Cheesy tattoos.
Yes, cheesy tattoos. But again, a case of Kurt Busiek. You know, he's again, while I didn't necessarily enjoy that volume of the Avengers that I read, I understand most people do and love his run on the Avengers in general. So I thought, why not put him on the team book?
Yes, you do know your audience, so I salute you for that.
Indeed. Any other questions for Greg? Anybody? Hearing none, I'll close Greg's portion by saying Greg was one of only two participants to have every one of his titles pulled by at least one person.
Wow.
So all 15 of his titles wound up on at least one pull list.
Impressive, Greg. Mm-hmm. And a full 15 to boot.
Moving on, we're going to move on to the West Coast contingent, the manager himself, Mr. Todd Weber, and Synchronicity Comics. Todd, I'll give you the opportunity to make an opening statement, although I don't know if it's necessary given the length of your pitches. They pretty much say everything you could possibly want to know, but your opportunity is here nonetheless.
Yeah, I felt kind of compelled to come up with everything I could, throw everything against the wall, and see what stuck or did not stick, because there were people who didn't think I did a good job of drafting, and that inspired me to maybe try a little harder with my pitches. But once I started, I couldn't stop. Why is this happening? I don't know. Let's find out. And so every action had a reaction, and I kept going and kept going. And before I knew it, I could borrow from this story and merge these two stories, and it became something rather unique. And I don't even know where to begin with it, but the idea was that it was an interconnected set of 12 books, and I didn't talk about this a whole lot, but I thought about them as, well, what if we do this as a monthly, each one is a graphic novel, and they're all released over the course of a year. I thought about it doing it that way, but in the end, I just figured my writers and storytellers would structure that the twists wouldn't come until later, you wouldn't necessarily see the links between the books, because each book is linked until that 11th, 12th month when these things pop, when these storylines come to fruition. So, yeah, I don't know what to tell you. I thought I did a pretty good job using every character twice. That was a goal for me. I wanted to use every artist only once, and I think the only time I violated that was Kevin Maguire. I'm scanning it. I believe that's the case. Most of the writers I only used once, that's it. I liked that I had a beginning, middle, end, and it just kind of kept going. I wanted to do the stories in different eras thing from the beginning, and I knew I was going to do a Golden Age book. With drafting Jason Aaron, I thought I was going to do a ancient type book like he's doing in Avengers with the prehistoric characters, but it ended up that I thought I could frame it with the dark side as Coach Boss type thing, and that kind of set the tone for my universe, and I took it from there. And then I tried to use characters in different ways. I used Batgirl as my Batman character and Hawk Girl as my Wonder Woman character, and all kinds of twists, but it all tied into that first book. So it's a through line, but hopefully people would still be able to pick up one or two of these books, like the Age of Gold book, and read that as a self-contained thing, as opposed to having to read through everything. But the goal was still to have books that tied into one another. So I'm sure there will be questions. I hope there will be.
Before we hop into the questions, just to let everybody know, Todd's top books in terms of polls were Age of Gold, Heroes and Villains, Age of Gotham, The Killing Joke / Killing the Joker, Age of Andromeda, The Saga, and Age of Bronze, Mutants and Monsters. His bottom books were Age of Darkness, Interplanetary Watchmen, Age of Extreme, Young Force Brigade, and Age of Wonder, The Hawk Girl Chronicles. I will say, however, one of those, again, going back to at FrankFran29, Mike on Twitter, he pulled Age of Extreme and wrote in parentheses, patches, exclamation point, exclamation point, exclamation point. So big ups from Mike there. So with all that being said, I'll open it up to questions from our panel.
I want to start with a statement that I feel like this was the most creative
yes.
use of everything, of everybody that created, you know, no offense to the rest of you guys, but when it comes to creative use of characters and interconnected ideas and just the way all of this flowed, Todd, if I was allowed to do it, I probably would have pulled every single thing that you wrote. because... From
well, you were allowed.
I could have, but I was trying to spread things out a little bit. It would never have worked the way I wanted it to. But
trust me, there were attempts, like I said, to make the comics draft great again by pulling only one company, but it didn't work out.
But getting back to my point, you had
thirsty.
Me with the...
Hang on, I'm thirsty. I'll be right back.
Thirsty!
water for the working man.
Cosmic Bastards was my favorite of the pitches because you turned Darkseid into Coach Boss, and I was immediately struck with the brilliance of that. So, yes, that is the big winner for me. So, as you were writing all of this, how long did all of this really take you to put down? Because my God, man, you wrote some really intricate pitches.
That was going to be my question as well, actually. I was going to ask the same question. How long did it take to come up with these ideas and then to actually bring them to fruition? Because I know you had mentioned maybe a few weeks out that you had kind of scrapped your original idea and started from scratch.
Yeah, that's a good point. I'm glad you brought that up, Greg. Like, this is the second idea. I'm really curious what the first one was.
First one had nothing to do with Cosmic Bastards or that the New Gods necessarily. It was more about Phoenix and telling a story with her and how she was kind of the thing. But I didn't draft Phoenix necessarily. I drafted Jean Grey.
Yeah.
So I had that. That was something I ended up changing. And then towards the end of it, I thought about doing like a Mera book, but Mera as Wonder Woman with Azzarello and Chang, and that was...
Oh, man, that would have been good, though.
It would have, but I thought I could do that with Hawk Girl instead. And using Hawk Girl as kind of my stand-in for Mr. Miracle / Orion as one of the Children of the Prophecy who ends up, at the end, killing Darkseid, I thought that would be kind of cool to give her that depth and still being able to use the reincarnation aspect of Hawk Girl where she keeps coming back. And were I to spend a little bit more time, I would put like more supporting characters in these, but they would end up being reincarnated Hawk Girl. We just don't know it yet until it's revealed at the end that I was this person too. As soon as she remembers that, somehow she dies and comes back again, kind of like Kendra. I had other ideas too, but I'm trying to think of some of the other things.
You deserve a standing O for that Age of Andromeda, the Saga pitch.
Yes, my 2 points are on that too.
That was my favorite pitch. You are brilliant, sir. And if there are variant covers for that book, I'm buying both of them.
Well, I regret putting the artist I put on that just because I feel, you know, maybe there's somebody better better fit. But if I'm going to use him, I'm going to have him draw the most deviant amount of things that he wouldn't enjoy doing.
Precisely. Like, this is why I'm pulling the book, because it's a brilliant pitch and you're sticking it to that douchebag. That's great. Love you for that.
Absolutely. I'm pulling Saga for almost the exact same reasons, because... putting Vaughn on there, having him right their way, and that is the proper use in this draft for that guy artist, who we don't even name. And I also will say that I really do appreciate the use of Hawker over Mera. They are doing some Mera as Wonder Woman type stuff in the in DC proper nowadays. So going a little bit different direction and properly using that reincarnation aspect is great. And as somebody who felt that New 52 existed solely so I could read Wonder Woman, I really thank you for having the Azzarello Chang group as well on that and making it a Wonder Woman stand-in book.
Thank you.
Yes.
Was the there ever any consideration to putting Mark Waid and Ethan Van Sciver together on a book?
Oh, God.
Like, because I feel like if we're going by the Eric Bischoff method of controversy creates cash, my God, you put those two together, that feels like everyone just has to pull it just to see what happens, right?
Yeah, no, I didn't think about that. That's an interesting choice. I did not consider that once. I wanted Waid specifically to do Captain America or Golden Age or both, and I wanted Van Sciver to be doing a space thing.
Gotcha.
So I have a question. How does the food taste at Anti-Life Barbecue?
Yes, it's something resembling petroleum and ass.
Now wait just a moment. I believe petroleum and ass was already mentioned by one company, so I don't know that you're allowed to mention it in your picture.
All right. Todd, what are the nature of the incriminating pictures that Rob Liefeld has of the synchronicity editor
in chief? That was the Matt Hardy pronunciation.
It sure was.
Rob Liefeld has pictures of me dressed up in Little Lord Fauntleroy clothing from my childhood.
Wow. If the truth shall set you free, you can now fire Liefeld.
Well, there we are.
I also
a little Dutch boy.
I thought you had some of the best titles of any of us in the draft and the pitches this time, Todd. How much? Because I'm somebody that in the past has had a hard time coming up with titles sometimes for these books. How long did it take you to come up with the titles versus the actual ideas?
Titles, a lot of them I came up with was the last thing. Like Age of Gold, I didn't know what I was going to call everything, and then I went very, very generic. But then I thought, well, no, one of my favorite albums is called Heroes and Villains, and that would work. So there was the tie-in there. But most of my titles were written by the era that they were going to be, and then I figured out the thematic thing afterwards. You know, the sub. What's the word I'm looking for? The specific thing at the end after I'd written the pitch, like Mutants and Monsters for Age of Bronze, which I'm quite surprised was one of my higher ones, because it was one of the ones I wrote very quickly when I was realizing I needed to finish this up. You know, I just thought that was kind of basic, but
I thought it was a good usage of those characters, because if you look at that list of characters, my initial thought was how, when I was scrolling down, I was like, how is he going to tie all of these together? And then I thought you did it pretty cleverly.
Yeah, a lot of it came down to that Stars and Stripes organization that was formed in the golden age of my comics, and it had repercussions all the way until the end with the Planetary book that I wrote, or that I pitched here. So yeah, looking back, I wish I could have consolidated these, but I had things I wanted to say. I had things I wanted to tell, and I wasn't able to just say. I didn't think my pitches or the concepts necessarily were strong enough without showing you where I was trying to go with it.
Also, I thought Age of Extreme Young Force Brigade was a phenomenal title.
Very much so.
Because I I'm pretty sure I saw that on shelves in 1996, or at least in my dreams.
Well, and I'm pretty sure I pulled that. So
yeah,
you did. I believe it was you and the aforementioned
Frank
Fran on Twitter. Tim, I think we're the two.
There you go.
Oh, Todd, I didn't mean to give that away, but
whoops.
Poor sweet and innocent honey badger.
Yeah,
right. Another character, just a young preteen girl, and you had to stick with Rob Liefeld.
Yeah, well, he wrote Wolfsbane, right? Not Wolfsbane. What was the one?
Feral.
Feral.
Yes.
Yeah.
Honey Badger is not Feral.
Wolfsbane was in there a little bit.
No, but he would draw. He would write and draw as such. Notice that it was three characters that I, or three things I was stuck with that I put in that same book: Liefeld, Splinter, and Honey Badger.
That was my original AJ Lieberman strategy. Oh.
Todd, I appreciated your usage of Jean Grey. You used her twice, the maximum numbers, and killed her both
killed
times.
Killed her both times, yeah.
I did not notice that.
That's awesome.
How can you not? Are you rocking with the idea here that Jean and the Phoenix are one and the same?
No, I'm not.
Okay.
No. Phoenix, I'm kind of sticking with the Byrne retelling.
A cosmic entity kind of thing.
Yeah.
What I thought, but was just curious because there's all sorts of different takes on that, as we know.
Yeah, and I go ahead, Jenny.
No, I was just going to ask. In Age of Gotham, why is the Joker a door-to-door sex toy salesperson?
That's how he sneaks
called
up
Jenny
on
Mate,
Barbara.
Is what that is.
Yeah,
it worked. It worked.
Yeah, we need that. We need an audio version of that GIF where Vince leans back in the chair, looking inquisitively.
I think there's an entire conversation to be had at some point later about the, as you said, the bait that we've put for each other in there as well. Put things that we knew that we wanted to get guarantee a pull out of.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I definitely baited Russell with the Cosmic Bastards and Jenny with the that aspect. And that was the only book I think I had any real shipping with was the... The Killing Joke book.
Did you get permission, showrunner Bruno Heller, to use the show Gotham in your Age of Gotham book?
Yeah, nobody else thought of that. But if I was going to reference somebody Breaking Bad and being tortured, I was going to bring in Gotham, and so that was part of maybe something I was hoping you guys would read and laugh and appreciate.
Yeah, and this was written, I think, before we saw Gotham's version of Bane.
Oh, man.
It's only more pressing. So, yeah, so a lot of it was me fusing, trying to work in different concepts that I really like Atlantis Chronicles or the putting in Man of Steel, a little bit of Man of Steel to the end of my saga pitch and having Drax and Starfire end up being the parents of Supergirl in there and that same kind of thing, like a quote. Also have so much affection for Maguire's art on the Adventures of Captain America from the early 90s, a story that he never finished, unfortunately, but he'd be able to tell this tale.
Yeah, that's a really good limited series.
Good old Fabian wrote that.
Good old Fabian, who wrote everything, yep.
And trying to do a little bit of the Marvels kind of perspective with my Golden Age book, too.
Awesome. Any other questions for Todd? All right. Hearing none, I would like to say, as I mentioned earlier, Greg was one of only two people to have every one of his titles on at least one pull list. Todd was the other, and he did it one better. Every one of Todd's titles were on at least two pull lists.
Wow. So, very good, Todd. Congratulations.
So there crap. You are, and on that high praise for Todd, I think we're going to take a little break here. And when we come back, we're going to dive into pitches from Russell, from Mitch, and round it out the only way we can with the unique pitches from Tim Capel. So stick with us through the break. We will be right back.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
PlaySuite Nation's Justin Rosero and Chad Campbell here. We want to let you know that we have a ton of great podcasts available to you on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and PlaySuite.com, and we now offer them to you on two great feeds. On the PlaySuite Wrestling feed, we bring you the Mothership, the Place to Be podcast, Main Event, Survey Says, Wrestling War Zone, a Monday Night Wars podcast retrospective, No Holds Barred, Jeff Learns Wrestling, and our monthly pay-per-view reaction shows. On top of that, we're also dipping into the vault, re-releasing the entire catalog of Where the Big Boys Play for your enjoyment. And in addition to these full-length shows, we also deliver special network pod blasts on topics old and new.
The Place to Be Nation pop feed is loaded with great content, offering such tremendous shows covering the land of pop culture, such as Geek and Sassy, Talkin' Pop, the Glenn Butler Podcast Hour Spectacular, Sunday Groove, PTBN Play, Freak Out Drive-In, Songs with Friends, Looking Forward, Looking Back, and Lucha Undead, as well as a veritable podcast heaven for comics fans with the Hard Traveling Fanboys, Sellers Points, Conversation Comics, DC Post Crisis Management, Marvel Age, and Marvel Age Masterclass, plus weekly pod blasts that cover the gamut of comic topics. The feed is also filled with insightful sports content, including the NBA team, This Week in the NFL, and more.
And you can find all these current shows, plus archives of our past podcasts, including The Kevin Kelly Show, as well, by subscribing to both feeds on iTunes. And while there, be sure to rate and leave feedback as well. All these shows, plus others, available at PlayStation.com. We cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, in-depth stretch projects, and more. Be sure to support our site by using PlayStation.com/Amazon while doing your online shopping. And download our free PTB Vintage Vault Refresh eBooks via the links on our site. We also want to thank our friends at Boneheads Wing Bar, ProWrestlingOnly.com, and TheHistoryOfWrestling.com. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr as well. PlayStation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Welcome back, Place to Be Nation pop listeners, to the second half of the Pitches podcast for the third biennial Peter David Memorial Place to Be Nation Pop Fantasy Comics Draft, presented by a hypothetical, non-rotational DC Comics online unlimited subscription service. And hopefully that's the last time I'll have to say that for the rest of this podcast.
It won't be.
Oh, shut up. Nobody asked you. I'm hosting now. I have the power. I'm the captain now, as that guy in that movie said.
That's not how he said it.
Yeah, say, well, that was a terrible imitation.
I'm not going to do a Somali accent. I am pulling a Ben Morse, and I am refusing to do an impression. That's what I'm doing.
As your co-host, I approve of this decision.
Yes, yes. In any event, when last we left you, we had just covered Todd Weber's Synchronicity Comics. So let's move on to another founding father of the Fantasy Comics Draft, one of four participants this year who have been there since the very beginning, that, of course, being Mr. Russell Sellers and his Grimdark Comics. Russell, your third time participating. Tell us a little bit about your approach. Just kind of give us an overview of how you came in this time.
Well, I tried not to do it exactly like I did before and have everything being interlinked. I thought I'd attempt to do separate families of titles that were all interlinked, but if you liked, say, one direction of one family, you could go with those titles, and if you liked, say, something on the other end of the spectrum, you could go with that. And then I also took the, I'll call it the Greg perspective on throwing in at least one or two titles that felt like they could just stand on their own. You don't need anything else. So I could, you know, try and hook some of those who might not be into the idea of pulling entire families of titles. But my primary mantra in writing everything this time was don't overthink it, because if I had kind of gone with this the way that I started to, I would have wound up in that same boat as like Greg and Todd of just having idea after idea that I wind up hating and just throwing out and starting all the way over. So this time, instead of doing that like I had done in previous times, I thought, let's go with first instinct. What hits my mind first, and flesh that idea out and just try to power through and get it done. So a lot of this really is first draft pitches. The previous time we did this, I wound up, like, I think I wrote maybe 10 to 11 pitches, and then Outlaw Bayou wound up actually being the very last thing I put together because I realized I hadn't used all my characters. That didn't actually happen this time. I wound up having ideas for most of these things as we were drafting, so this all kind of worked out a little better to me in that perspective, but when I look back on it now, I think that if I were an actual comics writer, the last character I should be given is Batman, and that I should maybe stick to more of the Superman stuff and stay in my lane, because that end of it is not going to work for me. But yeah, that was my approach.
Well, that's interesting you say that, because your top titles were The Dark Knights, The Brave and the Bold, and Green Lantern Corps, while your bottom title was Catwoman. So with that being said, we will open up the floor for questioning.
Yes. Go ahead, Todd.
I appreciate how on the cutting edge of writers, you always pick the new up and coming writers, and half the time I don't know who they are until halfway through. You know, you've already put the draft pitches out and then go, well, there's this new up and coming book I just heard that's got some heat. Oh, it's written by a guy that Russell drafted. Like Donny Cates. Donny Cates is red hot right now.
Yeah, his Marvel stuff has been selling really well. And he made me a Venom fan, so I was like, okay, well, I like this guy. I'm going to give him a shot.
Yeah, I wanted to say or focus on the way that you tied, particularly, I thought you used Thor incredibly well. And I realized as I looked at my pitches that I didn't specify that I had Jane Foster until the actual pitch itself, which I should have done. So apologies for that.
Well, your title was Goddess, so I think
you know, whatever.
It worked.
And in the pitch, there was a picture of Jane, so, you know, Jane Thor. We got it.
In any event, I really thought you used Thor really well. I thought I think Mitch had actually brought this up in our offline chat that we've referenced multiple times, which I'm sure the listeners are thrilled to hear about. But in the offline chat, Mitch had brought up the fact that you tied the lightning of Thor in with the lightning of the Speed Force, which was a really cool idea. What made you think of that, and how did you approach kind of tying the Flash and Thor universes together? And then also, another really good idea that actually, telling tales out of school a bit, may have been my favorite of your ideas was the Starman and Thor team up. How did you come up with these ideas to use Thor, a character that we've kind of seen used what I thought had been pretty much every way you could in the previous drafts?
I wanted a Superman stand-in, and Thor was what I had, so I basically Man of Steel'd him. Which is to say I John Burned him, I guess. But the idea to put the Flash there was that it just kind of occurred to me that whenever you see Thor fully realized and unleashed, it's, you know, lots of lightning. It's all tied into mysticism, into Norse mythology. So I thought, well, why not, since I'm not using, you know, the traditional metahumans anyway, why don't I have Wally's abilities linked to the same Norse mythology that Thor's is tied up in. And ultimately, as these stories would progress, that's where it would go. It would reveal that Wally's powers are more godlike in nature than they are science-based. So things start to get a little bit more magical as we go along. But it does, you know, it opens up time travel, which is Cable comes into it. And Cable actually is the glue that unites both ends of my story. If people read the first pitch and then you get all the way down to the last one in Shadow of the Bat, you see that Cable shows up there because Cable is the point of view character for that entire series, as he is the one traveling through time and seeing how Bruce Wayne came to be Batman.
But is Cable going to look like Rip Hunter?
Yes.
Awesome.
After 0 Hour, how could he not?
How can he not? Excellent.
How can he not look like Rip Hunter? He will always be, be Cable, or like look like that version of Rip Hunter. Like they're interchangeable at this point. This is the 90s version of the characters.
Oh, excellent. Right. Now, is your idea to have through Cable both the Batman book at the end linked with the God of Thunder book at the top?
It's all kind of interconnected. Cable really comes in Scarlet Speedsters because of time travel being opened up. He's following Bart Allen back to the what we would consider the modern day, but his whole scheme is that whenever he goes back in time, he realizes that immediately everything is screwed up. Basically, Cable becomes the confused reader of this universe, because I played off the idea. It may have been a little too subtle, but there were times when people would look at our universes and say that they just don't get what we're doing, because this all makes no sense. Like, how can you do this when this character's history is actually this? And I thought, well, why don't I take a character, an existing character, and make him that person and put him in my universe. So Cable does not recognize the universe he's in. He realizes that this is all just so screwed up. There are people he doesn't know. There are whole swaths of history that don't make any sense. So he's kind of my through line of all of this. But it's funny you mentioned the team up of Thor and Starman. That was the last thing I wrote. I really had no idea what I was going to do with Starman when I drafted him. And suddenly it occurred to me that, he's a magic-linked character. Why don't I just make his cosmic staff Asgardian? And ultimately it would be revealed to be that. And had I thought about it like long enough, I didn't want a challenge flag thrown on me, so I didn't mention in the pitch that his cosmic staff was also supposed to be the housing unit of the Infinity Stones.
Oh, nice. Very good.
So that's where that would have gone.
Another stroke of genius here. Nova Prime as Granny Goodness, I didn't see coming, and then was instantly thrilled by Ed Asner's Granny Goodness as Nova Prime.
Yeah, that was just that was my attempt at a political book, or my two attempts at two interconnected police brutality books, I guess, is how I approach them. Police brutality in space. So, Granny Goodness seems like kind of my big bad of everything,
yeah,
at least in
that
top
part. It almost seems like you could use her as sort of a stand-in for Darkseid in some ways, as your universal-wide connective villain, the way I use Lex, for instance.
In a similar way, I had two that I used that way, but Granny was certainly the big one for the cosmic level stuff.
What made you put Chris Priest on both those books, Nova and Green Lantern?
Because I wanted him to come at it from both sides, to look at the idea of how police work and how private security works, and have a social commentary on both. And Chris Priest might be one of the most incredible social commentary writers ever in comics, from his Black Panther stuff all the way up to the stuff that he's doing right now in Deathstroke. I think the guy is absolutely brilliant, and I've always wanted to see him write something cosmic, but I've never really seen him do it. So I thought, well, this would be an interesting thing to give him a chance to do something that I have never seen him do, but something that feels like it fits with his personality.
It feels like he's a writer that has never really, or at least I'm aware of, gotten, he did write a little bit of Green Lantern back in Action Comics Weekly, but I've always thought that he would be a guy that would be perfect in the modern landscape of Green Lantern, with the mythos being established as it has, the reimagining of Sinestro over the years.
And it's also why I picked the artist that I did, because the two artists on the book have also not really done cosmic stuff like to that level. Andrea Sorrentino is one that I think would be killer on a Green Lantern book, and I think he would pair very well with Mikael Janin.
My last question for you, Russell. Do I have permission to read one line from one of your pitches in JR voice?
Please do.
Can Raphael just please, for the love of God, get a decent slice of New York style pizza?
I was really writing one pitch, actually. It wasn't even a pitch. It was just I couldn't come up with what I wanted the story to be, so I just wrote dialogue. Blog, and I wrote it thinking of like J.R. Shack. And if you read it that way, it's way funnier.
That is how I read it. Very much so. Very much so. How come a 6-issue mini for Return to Outlaw Bayou?
Don't overstay your welcome. Because I didn't put it that way in the initial pitch, but I, when I wrote Outlaw Bayou, I thought of it as kind of a beginning, middle, and end series. You know, it's a period piece, so it's not going to have a long life. And with this one, I wanted it to be more of a launching pad into another book, rather than just sticking around as a as an ongoing series. So I thought, you know what, this is a story that felt like it could be told in 6 issues, and we move on. But the follow-up stuff would wind up feeling like a completely different book.
So what I'm hearing is the purpose of this series is simple, but actually quite complex.
Yes. I have a suggestion for your next Outlaw Bayou project in the future, Russell, a title suggestion. I think you should name it Archie to Outlaw Bayou and Back Again.
No Archie characters drafted, by the way. That was interesting.
Surprising.
Isn't it?
That weird. Will be different next year. I'll just
yeah, I think whoever wins will be using the turtle rule with the Archie characters.
Forsyth Jughead Jones the 45th. Or whatever his name is.
Todd, you get Miss Grundy.
And the dust from her hooch.
No, you'll get the sexy seated version of Miss Grundy.
Yeah, the imposter.
You know, I should have used her anyway.
Spoilers, Todd.
So we're setting up a Nova Corps / Green Lantern Corps war, right?
Mm-hmm.
Corps war.
Yes. that is coming down, and ultimately you're going to have two characters switch sides. You're going to have Sinestro ditch the Green Lanterns and become the new kind of de facto second banana to Granny Goodness in the Nova Corps. And Richard Rider is going to have a crisis of conscience, renounce the Nova Corps, and wind up taking Sinestro's place as a Green Lantern.
I like
Roxy Comics featured many characters switching sides as well.
Hey-o!
And a lot of Dick Riders as well.
Mm.
Yes. Oh, well played.
Oh, my. Any other questions for Russell? Hearing none, we're going to move on to what has been perhaps the most anticipated portion of the podcast.
Okay, sorry.
I know he can't hardly contain himself. He has been dying to talk about this process for God knows how long. Mitch Okun, your moment has arrived. Take it away.
Well, first of all, can you guys hear me?
Yes.
Okay, because it's been a minute ago. And yes, I have been dying to talk so much about this thing, this process, for so long. For those who may not remember the beginning of this, I have been fortunate enough to be brought into the Place to Be Nation universe as originally a fan of this concept, and I've waited many years since I first heard about it to do it, and I've made many, many rookie mistakes. And I have seen many, many interesting things, and it has been an absolute blast. Let me just start with that. So, I'm learning so much from what everybody else is talking about with their pitches and what they did and all the things I've done. I was initially very happy with my draft, and it wasn't until I wrote and started to put the things together to realize that the pieces that I missed it and were all the rookie mistakes. All the things we're talking about, where we have things for bait for other people, I did not plan that properly. Making sure we had the writers that people would want to pull, no matter who, what they were doing. I didn't think about that sort of thing, and I don't know the insider information that you guys do to try to say, oh, I know that so-and-so is going to like this book. As a matter of fact, the one and only thing I had for that, I went ahead and took the bait, which was making sure that Bendis wrote Green Arrow for Nick.
And it worked!
And it worked! Having said that, once I started writing, I also fell victim to the whole, oh my god, if you keep writing, you're going to get so far down the rabbit hole, you're going to fall out the other side, nobody's going to know where the hell you are anymore. I had such grand plans for all the stories that were going to happen in these books that I kept expanding my universe internally. I have a very complete story that is supposed to happen around each of my titles of my books that I did not properly explain. I was never going to be able to go to the level of a Synchronicity Comics type writing, but I do see that in hindsight, I wish I had done more straight explanation. I went straight for the pitch type thing a little more, and I obfuscated information that I wish I had told the audience from the beginning. So, my big plan here is that we talked about, we made an amalgam reference earlier, the universe is like that. To me, the same the way that Cable looks around and is the representative of the audience, that's what I wanted this whole thing to be. This is just a temporary world. The characters don't realize it, and the ultimate thing that was going to realize is they were going to eventually find out that the gods' secrets were that they keep recreating the planet over and over and over again, reusing various pieces from different pieces they tried, different universes they tried, until they find the one that could finally stop my incursion, my Abraxas incursion, which is an obvious stand-in for Galactus. I wanted to keep it at an earthly level because I wanted to not have to worry about the reincarnation of all these other planets and all these other universes. But if I just tried to set up the level of just having gods and the one planet, so now we have pieces from previous universes trying to stop what they couldn't stop before. There are dozens and dozens, if not hundreds or thousands, of previous universes that are just dead, destroyed. Marvel being one of them, DC being another. The previous iterations of Place to Be Nation, pop referencing, all of it. Gone. This was going to be the chance to try it.
No!
So like
Ho
the Matrix.
Ho Ho Wow Comics.
No. So like the Matrix, right?
Now, I'll have you know that Ho Ho Wow Comics are indestructible.
Yes.
They are, after all, two-time champions.
But that would be what Doom would eventually find out in Heavens. And I think Heavens is the book that probably suffered the most from this, because that's the book that really started my whole imagination of where I wanted my books to go. The whole concept of having all this complex politics and universe and secret planning of all these pantheons and all these gods, I thought would be such an interesting story. I thought Ta-Nehisi Coates does really grand stories in that way, and Russell Dowderman is a definite choice for me to draw all these different worlds like that. But, goddamn it, if Adam Warlock... I thought it would be a good place to stick him. And I think he just killed me, and it took me in the wrong direction, and I didn't put the information in there, and it just went downhill from there.
Well, there's a fine line between kind of over-explaining and what is, you know, ostensibly an elevator pitch, right? And
right.
Still trying to get your big idea across. And in hearing this, I'm hearing that it sounds like something that's very meta, which automatically is going to appeal to me. Like, I always just drop trowel for that kind of thing for whatever reason. And, you know, some really cool high concepts here. And, I mean, yeah, you can't really redo your pitches at this point. And I'm not even saying necessarily I would, but this is something that absolutely does speak to me. And in a world with unlimited funds, resources, and pulls, I'd totally be on board with your universe.
Well, thank you.
Yeah.
I open it up to any more questions. I just want to say real quick, Mitch's top titles were Titans, Blue Beetle, Green Arrow, and Challengers of the Fantastic. His bottom title was The Fantastic Four. Proving once and for all that nobody cares about the Fantastic Four.
Well,
yeah, you got pulled one of the FF kind of related titles.
You pulled Challengers of the Fantastic.
Similar to what Jenny said earlier, Fantastic Four for me was an attempt to use a different voice. I had so many that are in the same voice. I could see myself announcer voice reading a lot of my own pitches, and I wanted to try to come up with something that had a different tone, that had kind of that romantic, nicey-nice stuff going on in it, that, as you can say just by the way I'm saying it, is not me, you know. So I tried. I might not have quite got there.
Did you plan Matter Eater Lad as an ongoing, as a miniseries, as a one-shot? How long did you envision the hashtag Tenzel ate it going along?
God, it took us that long. We are an hour and a half into this podcast, and that's the first time somebody has said that, and that is shocking to me.
I just got to say, man, your persistence with that hashtag was something of legend. Yeah. So
isn't that what hashtags are supposed to do?
And it worked. I pulled it.
I got to tell you, I was kind of sold on it just from having Scotty Young doing something like this because it seems like something he would do. So I was just curious, how long did you envision this title going on?
I had at least the first story arc put out, which would probably be a 12-issue type thing, until the involvement of the parrot of the politics aspect. Whether or not it would go on after that, I guess would depend on sales, which sound like they didn't do that great.
So maybe you get 6 issues.
They were middling sales. I'll put it that way.
It could do well on trades. You know, let's see.
Probably that kind of.
I mean, Mitch, when you're talking about, like, baiting us, you know, you're with your eating everything here, you missed an opportunity to bait me here. So I'm just going to say, like, next time, try harder.
Wow.
So to speak, huh?
Uh-huh.
Yes. No ass was eaten in the production of this time.
That's what I'm saying, like...
I mean, also, he's a YouTube star. I do have to try to keep it PG.
Yeah, he's not a U-porn star yet.
Well, yes, he's not.
I'm saying though.
They sounds maybe, like tinsulate everything but ass. Right.
Well, I'm a sucker for the book because I don't know that I've ever seen in the whole time we've been doing the draft a pitch that's more relatable to me as a person than a book about somebody that just can't stop eating.
Wow.
Well, and we're setting up intercompany crossovers between Tenzel and Squirrel Girl.
That's true.
Oh,
exactly.
That's true.
Yes.
Everybody made the intrigued JR noise.
At the same time, which is a little off-putting. But let me ask you this, Mitch. Do you think, in hindsight, was there anything else you could have done with Adam Warlock, or do you think that was pretty much the only place you had to put him?
I mean, I suppose he could have just been stuck on Titans.
Some would argue he has.
I tried very hard to not just stick him somewhere. There actually ended up being a couple of characters, Iron Fist, that I found that I really had plans for that didn't work anywhere, and they got stuck into a team book. And since he was a bizarro round pick, I tried very hard to not just do that to him, to actually put him somewhere and make him more featured, because I know that was important, at least to us, to show that we could roll with those punches. I do feel I'm particularly proud of my usage of some of the other ones that I got forced on that way, but he was definitely the one that I got stuck with. I would have probably tried to describe it better, if nothing else. I don't think I have another place for him.
Well, I was going to say, your explanation of your universe actually makes a lot of sense to me, and ties it all together more than maybe I thought from the pitches. Like it, the idea of it being this giant meta experiment, like Tim said, is really interesting to me, and very creative. But yeah, one of the other things I want to ask you about is, I meant to ask this of all the other people that did group books as well, but what was your thought process in putting together your Justice League or Avengers stand-in? We pretty much all have a Justice League or Avengers stand-in team. What was your thought process on assembling that roster? Because that's turned into one of the hardest parts for me in assembling my character usage every time.
Leftovers.
Absolutely.
For me. Sorry.
No, it was in some case leftovers. I think Iron Fist and Dead Man were the quote unquote leftovers. Dead Man at one point was in Ilyana's book. He was in From Hell. But I had the story condensed down enough that he got left out. And so the two of them were a bit leftovery. Wonder Woman and Shazam were my stand in for my big two. I just had to have my top female and top male power characters type things like that. Mr. Miracle and Mr. Terrific were absolutely specific picks for storyline reasons. Mr. Terrific doing the atheism thing and having the issue believing with the gods. I really wanted to play that off of Mr. Miracle being a new god and the whole point of my universe being having gifts from it. The whole point of the universe is I redid every origin essentially so that they all think they got all their powers from the gods. Except for my displaced paranormals, the whole thing with them is that they're crazy because they actually remember. The whole thing, they're crazy because they're the ones who know that this is not the proper universe for them. So I put the people who would be like that over down there, whereas the people who would just be standard soldiers for the most part, in one way or another, into my Titans.
Yeah, I'm rereading Displaced Paranormals right now, and it clicks for me after you said that about the universe. Now
I'm having so much remorse now.
No, I mean a lot of these were good pitches because I pulled I don't want to say how many but I pulled several of your books. But yeah, this one, Displaced Paranormals, I don't think was one of them. But now I'm thinking, you know, with my meta knowledge, I probably would have pulled that one maybe. Based on, as Tim pointed out, the tendency for me to drop trow at the thoughts of
right. I always wanted Starman and Crazy Jane. They were on my radar from the beginning. I thought they were fun characters and interesting characters to use. It wasn't until I started trying to think about some of those forced characters, particularly Martian Manhunter, that I started putting the whole concept of the crazy team together, the whole bunch of nut jobs. And it worked out that, again, with the eating theme, that three of the four of them all had food-related little jokes about them between the Sloppy Joes, the Oreos, pizza.
That was clever.
Yeah, you know, so.
Now, you drafted the blue or purple Starman, right? Prince?
Something? No, Tom Calor.
Yeah, no, I'm time-displaced. He's Tom Calor. Because that's the point here, is he says he's from the future. So he actually is probably where it started, because in JSA, he lives in the asylum. That's where he eats his Sloppy Joes every Thursday or whatever the hell it is. You know, that's what kind of started this off on this part, is that that was a Geoff Johns way that he translated him, saying that 21st century science couldn't handle his meds, and he has something simple pill that he takes that stops him from being a complete nut job in the 30th century.
You should do a podcast.
Yeah. It'd probably make more sense than this right now.
Now, are Ileana and Danny Moonstar going to figure out that they have history together, that they've kind of done this before? Are they going to become displaced paranormals themselves?
Well, my culmination for my universe was going to be some sort of incursion type event where eventually everybody starts realizing and doing it. I don't think they're the ones who get it early. For me, the ones who get it early, because of the history, because of the way it does it, is Doom and Reed.
Mm-hmm.
It's challenges the Fantastic as they go through everything else that eventually find something like that and they start figuring out what the hell is going on. You know, so eventually everybody finds out, but I don't think it plays into their part. They're just trying to depower as many Hell characters as you can. It goes into that concept of Hela and many of the Death characters having power based on the number of souls that they control. So if they start releasing more and more of those souls, they're depowering all those hell-based characters.
Mm. I gotcha.
And last comment that I have is there was for as much as I have besmirched the Fantastic Four over the years, that was one of my other last titles cut. I did pull Challengers of the Fantastic, but I almost pulled Fantastic Four because I thought if you're going to use the name Fantastic Four and if you're going to use the objectively terrible character, Mr. Fantastic, that's about as fine a way to do it as I can see. So, excellent work on Challengers and Fantastic Four.
Reed was actually one of my regret picks initially, and I found I can use him in that dynamic with Doom towards the end, and it let me go into the Challenge and a Fantastic thing. It also helped me find a good place for Elongated Man. Ralph was my Ben Grimm stand-in, and some of the great work that Chip Zdarsky is doing for Marvel 201 that led into the Fantastic Four stuff right now is really where I had that mannerism of the two of them being such buddies when they were young. And I actually kind of regret not putting Zdarsky on the Fantastic Four book, you know. But I figure Jeff Lemire doing Terrifics right now is essentially writing Fantastic Four.
Yep.
Right.
That's why I was going to make that point, too. Pretty ballsy of you to put Mr. Fantastic and Elongated Man in two books together. That's really going for it. And yes. But I mean, understanding your universe better, I see it more. Yes. I picked one of those books, but I like the concept of the same guys told in different eras, obviously, because I did that in some of my pitches, too.
Yeah, well, the joke we had made is that I definitely stretched the two of them out, yes.
They could have. I feel like that if you were going to do a standalone Jenny Bate book, you could have used both of them as well.
Yeah.
Agreed.
Yeah. My mind just does not work like Jenny's, I guess. I'm sorry to hear. But
you do.
Yeah. Well,
you're right. I got to say, you kind of lost me with Adam Warlock. But yeah, Adam well, Warlock.
That is definitely your fault.
Oh. Burn.
Giving me Adam Warlock. Thank you so much for that.
That was Nick, I think.
Who drafted him first initially?
Mm.
Who drafted him from the beginning?
Yeah, who did I swap him from?
From Mr. Capel.
Probably.
No, I didn't draft him.
Oh, must have been Todd then.
Wait.
I was drunk.
Indeed you were.
But Adam Warlock, you know, he's a character that wears...
No, it's actually, if I'm not mistaken, Miss Jenny, because that's how... No. Jenny gave me Martian Manhunter for Namor.
Yes.
I'm trying to find the freaking Adam Warlock. Oh, that's... Yes, Mr. Cable. You got my Harley Quinn out of that for that.
Hmm. We'll have to go
he
back
was
and
drunk
review.
Too,
round 33.
Wow, look at this sheet. Bringing the statistics to this.
Clearly, I had grand visions for Adam Warlock. That must have really derailed me, that Nick pick.
Morlock ate it.
It was his Farrah Fawcett hair that really put him over the top in our in our standings.
I'm retconning the draft already.
Any more questions for Mitch before we move on?
Not one thing about Son of the Demon? Not like that. I thought that was... I enjoyed my
little... Now somebody ask him about it so he won't feel bad.
No. It's just,
yeah, Todd.
So, do you have Ra's al Ghul or no?
He's not mentioned, but he is implied there. As a matter of fact, I specifically didn't even mention Talia, even though it's Talia in that book in there. But I just like the idea of Son of the Demon being that term there when I had the actual demon character. It went from there. But I see that book as, you know, one of those things where the families keep changing sides, and at different points, different parts of the family are fighting with and against each other constantly.
Yeah, and I don't want to tell... I'm telling tales out of skew, but that was one that made my pull list, because I appreciated the usage of Etrigan in a way that, as he's a character, I think that I had one of the other drafts, and I had no idea what to do with him, so...
And someday there will be a really good Etrican book again. I mean, it's like Dan DiDio keeps saying, these characters are just waiting for the right writer to pop them, and hopefully, you know, maybe Charles Soule will write him well. I mean, I never liked Etrigan in Kirby version. It was kind of weird for me. And even the, I believe it was Garth Ennis, was a little too dark. But yeah. Hopefully we'll see more of that character in the future.
I liked him on the cartoon.
That's a good point, Todd. And if there's one thing we can trust Dan DiDio to do, it's to put the right writers with the right characters telling the right kinds of stories. Well, so
we got to make the best of it, because he's not going anywhere, unfortunately.
I'm aware. But, you know, I can still hate it. Yep. Hashtag resist, as they say. In any event,
you're going to like Green Lantern, I'm telling you.
I'm not going to read it, so it'll be awful hard for me to like it.
Come on, Nick.
I'm not reading it. Why would I read it? Why? Give me a reason.
Because it might be good.
Okay. Are you going to read it, Greg?
Listen, I'm not going to read it because... But I'm going to pull it. I'm pulling it. I'm just not reading it. Because
wow.
I'm so
whatever
far
you're doing in
comments.
Your private time is irrelevant to my thoughts on the work of Grant Morrison. So
I'll be pulling it while reading it, maybe, if it's good.
Maybe you will. In any
this
event.
This used to be a draft results podcast.
Oh,
it's still an episode of HGF.
Exactly. Thank you, Russell, for pointing it out.
Reading and watching.
Yes.
What have you been reading and watching?
As and you, we are, we've been reading that? Nothing.
Five stars.
I have been reading the Walking Dead spoilers, so look forward to look backward by the time this comes out. Look backward to that episode of HDF where I react to them with reaction, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Also read them. Can't wait for this.
Oh God. Anyway, we're getting way off topic. Hearing no further questions from Mitch, we're going to move on to what, and I'm not, you know, trying to suck up here or anything, but this is my most anticipated portion of the
same
of this night. Because okay. If anybody, you know, we had four different participants who have participated in every single fantasy comics draft at this point. And I feel like one of them has openly said he's just sick of doing it, and so decided to take his comics line in a little bit of a different direction. So, Tim Capel, tell us about Everything You See and Everything You Don't comics.
Yes, Everything You See and Everything You Don't comics, represented for the third consecutive draft. I will say that I came into the draft this year with two goals in mind. The first was to take something beautiful and pure and to absolutely shit all over it.
Yes.
And the second goal was just to prove a point, and it's that your fucking draft doesn't matter, and that
Amen.
I would reveal the futility of this godforsaken exercise by just making a mockery of the entire concept. So from the outset, I think you will find that I strategically inoculated myself against defeat, and I did that by just unburdening myself of all attachments going in. Like, by doing that, just my victory, I felt like, was assured. No matter what the results say, that's my kind of moral victory. So yeah, I think I'll open the floor to questions with my strategy revealed. I know it was a little bit hard to decipher, probably. You didn't realize maybe what my intentions were, but what have you got for me?
Before we open up to questions, I'll give you his top titles were Daredevil Red, Alias Investigations, and Death Defying Daredevil. His bottom titles, and Tim, please correct me if I get the full title of this one wrong, The Great Busted Arse British Blokes and Iceman were your two bottom titles.
From the complex to the simple.
Excuse me, it is the Great British Busted Arse Blokes.
I apologize.
Because they are Breaking Bad in Braddock Manor.
Breaking Braddock?
They sure are, Stevie.
What's your intention with that Hal Jordan book, just to see if you could get Nick to pull a dance slot title?
Well, yeah.
Or was it what I think it actually was, like most of your draft pitches, kind of the antithesis to what other people were doing by trying to bait each other into like pulling these titles? You were trying to see if you could make them hate pull it.
Possibly. I really thought that this solicitation was written for Nick Duke. I'm sure he pulled it. It's an obvious.
I did not, sir.
In more ways than one.
Well, that's your mistake. I mean, it's. I think it's a natural direction to take the character. How can you not do this? I think, you know, the one creative choice that you make with an iconic or kind of long-running character should really come to define them, and they should never, ever, ever be able to escape that. You should just have to always circle back to that. I mean, isn't that what makes comics great? Isn't that why we keep yes. reading?
I also want to commend you on one thing this may only be funny to me, but Hands in Fearful Extremities had me cackling for like 10 minutes before I could actually read the rest of the pitch.
Okay. Yeah,
like I said, I never know one day to the next what's going to make me laugh, but that did it.
Well, I'm glad to hear that. I would say that was the most fun to write. Absolutely.
I could tell. I could tell when I was reading it. I was like, this is. I felt obligated to pull that because of the cleverness, the tremendous writing, and just the fun behind it. Because I anticipated the level of joy you were having writing this. Okay. And I anticipated that you were writing this with the thought of appealing to 90s level readers such as me.
And consider, you pulled a Scott Lobdell in 2018.
Damn right. Damn right. I'm ready to look at the crudely drawn cave images and read the, whatever. know?
It is called hands and feet. I mean, it's...
hey. He draws with his hands and feet now, which is a great skill for a man of his advanced age. But I have a lot of questions here. I'm just going to go kind of chronological here. I'm going to let other people jump in so I don't hog the entire segment. But my first question is, I think, the most interesting question that I could possibly ask, and that is your Hal Jordan the Dan Quayle Graying Temples version?
Oh, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Yes, okay. Yes,
fantastic.
All right, I'm regretting the non-poll a little bit.
Yep.
Okay.
One of those things that's a little... Do what now?
There's nothing wrong with Graying Temple.
Mm-mm.
No, absolutely
definitely
not.
Definitely not.
No one said there were.
It's one of those things. It's hard to convey in a pitch, right? So
right. You can't use Dan Quayle's name because you didn't draft him.
No, well, I could have used some of the Graying Temple Hal Jordan art if you had requested it. I could have put that up there on the site. But
now, here's another question for you. Is Tom Kalmiku still called Pie Face in this world?
No, God.
He was Pie Face and Carol.
No, he was Cream Pie and Carol.
Yes, the pie facing here is quite figurative.
Mm. And then the last question on this particular book, and then I'll let others come in here, but so to speak, Ken, not Bobby Lashley. I found that an interesting distinction. At any point, were you considering drafting one Bobby Lashley in the tournament?
I'm not sure it would have been allowed.
Probably not.
But if we can get into some.
Tim, if we allowed the Wonder Woman hippo, I assure you by that point we probably would have let Bobby Lashley slide.
Noted comics creator.
Bobby Lashley. You know, that's one of those great draft regrets. I could talk more about that as well.
And next year, do we love Bobby?
We love
Bobby. Yeah. Turns out, yes.
Tim, can I ask you something?
Sure.
Please read your pitch for Alias Investigations.
You'd like me to read it right now.
I need it preserved on audio format for generations to come.
So I have a title called Alias Investigations, written by Paul Dini, artist Lee Weeks. And the title of the first arc is going to be Genosian Prankster. It reads... Lovebirds Jessica Jones and Luke Cage have a sneaking suspicion that the supposedly new and improved tourist destination of Genosha isn't the squeaky clean portrait of paradise, some of those peas pop, it boasts in its branding. If their instincts prove correct, they'll stop at nothing to blow the lid off the island nation's dark underbelly. And if they're wrong, hey, it's a tax-deductible vacation in the lap of luxury. But when Jessica witnesses a Genosian delegation become violently, explosively ill during a crucial diplomatic summit with U.S. ambassadors, it feels a little too suspicious than a mere case of food poisoning. Meanwhile, Luke infiltrates an illicit MMA ring on Genosian soil with the steel-hearted mutant Colossus as its prize fighter. What's the connection? The clues are as sparse as they are disparate. An Annie DeFranco mixtape. A shit-covered speculum. A petroleum-toting, foul-smelling femme fatale. How does it all end in murder? A murder for which Colossus seems all too ambivalent about his involvement.
Duh, I did.
Too busy?
Bravo!
Yeah.
Too much.
That's why we do this, folks.
Mm-hmm.
That's the pitch that needed a little extra. Like, after I did it, I was like, it's just too... It's not enough. So
shit-covered speculum definitely had to be a late addition.
I had to revisit that.
I felt like throwing in the Annie DeFranco mixtape was all the extra.
Well... You know, these late editions, I mean, this almost became two different books, but I said, nah.
This was tremendous. Now, next of my many questions, the users. Tim. This is a this is a book involving those who have issues with addictions to various things, be they alcohol, be they narcotics, be they food, sex, or indeed rage. Now, was this a part of your draft strategy as it was to draft characters that had existing addictions, or was this just a happy accident that you happened to draft characters that had addictions?
No, it kind of was part of my draft strategy. Here's the thing. I definitely leaned fairly heavily on the that old chestnut, the side draft, which is when you draft a particular character, and it's sort of understood that you get the family of characters associated with them, assuming they are not specifically drafted themselves. So I thought if I could at least get Roy Harper, old Arsenal, I was like, well, if I have him, then I can conceivably use any character that's an addict or has issues with mental illness, perhaps, as offensive as that would be, and as offensive as I can make it in this pitch. It seems like it would be allowable as long as those characters have not already been drafted. So that's my conceptual and thematic hook. And I will say that the name of this title, I don't think anyone other than Ben Morris would recognize this, but it's kind of a takeoff on The Losers, which is written by current Marvel Comics editor-in-chief Akira Yoshida, C.P. Cebulski, excuse me.
Well done.
Friend.
Now, I particularly am happy with the usage of Snowflame here. For those listeners that may not be familiar with the character of Snowflame, what was it that led to you drafting this individual?
Cocaine.
On his part or yours?
Yes, I did actually draft him. That was not someone I got stuck with. It was a late period burst of inspiration.
I really thought you were going to answer Mitch with simply yes.
Yes. So did I.
Yeah.
You barely missed the poll with me on this one, by the way, just for the fact that Chaykin was the thing that was the striking.
Tim, I don't know if you were purposefully baiting me with this one, but my favorite of your pitches was Our Old, The Way to Dusty Death.
Oh, thank you.
That was, oh God, just everything about Jonathan Hickman writing Aunt May just works for me. Everything about this pitch is wonderful.
Your usage of Aunt May was akin to when 1985 Frank Miller got his hands on Batman and redefined him for a new era.
Oh, that's very flattering. I mean, this is my, we all talk about how we have the Justice League-esque team book centerpiece, and I think that's clearly what this is for my line.
I have yet another question, Tim, if that's all right.
Sure.
The high AF evolutionary. What is he high AF on?
Libertarianism.
And what is it that kind of led him to his position as the high AF evolutionary?
Cocaine.
Very good.
Or what Todd said.
I have a genuine question about this. You picked Daredevil first.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't see where he was in your theme. Is there an intent? Was there a direct intent correlation or intent between him and your concept of absolute garbage?
No.
So he was actually trying to pick something somewhat real, so I would have maybe a pull or two.
So we that was an attempt to swerve a little bit.
Miss,
go fuck yourself, Mitch.
Yeah.
Wow. Ouch.
Wow.
I had it in my head that, okay, they did Daredevil Yellow, and, you know, that was pretty good, I guess. All those, you know, Loeb and Sale color books, whatever.
And yet, they never did, like, a Daredevil Red, right? And sort of the obvious, kind of stupid fantasy booking part of it. So, okay, we'll do that. And that's going to be a semi-legitimate series in this dumpster fire of a line.
I do think there's a legitimate question, because I had a very somewhat similar question, because, you know, in the midst of these funny pitches that you were writing, which I thought were great, Daredevil Red and the other Daredevil book, name of which, were legitimately intriguing.
Yeah.
And, like, books that I would actually, like, legitimately pull in real life if I were somebody that pulled comic books regularly with money. And I thought that was a kind of an interesting swerve from the general comedic tone of the everything you see and everything you don't comic book universe.
Death-defying Daredevil is a legit great pitch with a killer creative team that would sell.
Mike Murdock.
Yes,
Mike Murdock.
I pulled it from that.
Awesome. I appreciate you. I mean, I think part of that is just. Number one, it's hard for me to disrespect Daredevil in kind of any context. Number two is just trying not to lean so heavily on, like, this shit gets old after a while, believe me. So even trying to write it. So just trying to pace myself a little bit and having something that, I mean, don't get me wrong, there's ridiculous shit thrown in there.
Sure.
And is written in a way that's kind of like you would never see a real comic book pitch written, but it's just trying to break up the absurdity a little bit.
Yeah, well, we talked about having there was a 6-issue mini in one of our universes. There was Todd mentioned the idea of doing these as kind of maybe 1-a-year graphic novel releases or something like that. How long do you think it's going to take, or do you envision it taking Matt Murdock to, quote, fuck the pain away with Harley Quinn and his title Daredevil Red?
Long time. I would say at least 4 trades.
As long as the sales are still rolling in, right?
Yeah. Yeah. It's going to be heavily decompressed.
Oh, that you got Nick Duke written all over that one then.
Yep, I'm down. I'm down for it. All right. Yeah, go ahead, Greg. I feel like you have more questions.
My God, I could ask questions about all these books. There's so much here. Alan Davis, perfect creator fit. Was there any other creator but Alan Davis that you were considering? Because I'm certain that you had the idea already for great British busted arse blokes going into the draft. Was it always an Alan Davis book, or were you just waiting to see which British writer would be the best person to draft for this particular title?
Again, it's one of those deals where I drafted Captain Britain, thought that gave me carte blanche to pretty much any British superhero not otherwise drafted. And sure. To be honest with you, I'm not even sure that a lot of these characters that I named off could be considered British. I think a lot of them are, extra-dimensional aliens and people of other species and planets, but
Marvel UK.
That's okay. Yeah, throwback to Marvel UK. I thought that this was actually probably my most tasteless and offensive pitch, surprisingly. Kind of felt wrong coming out of me, but I did it anyway.
Oh, God. Now, sometimes things just feel wrong coming out of you, and you just have to roll with it until it's over.
Good point.
Yeah, yes. Especially after Taco Bell visits.
I mean, I adore Alan Davis, so that's part of the disparity between what are we doing and the creator and pitch itself.
Well, speaking of creators that we beloved, Robert Kirkman and Doug Monkey on Swampeteaves. I just again want to give you great credit for that. I appreciate the allusion that any astute reader will pick up to the Alabama Hammer commercials, which people should seek out on YouTube, and also the use of the legendary. This is a group that I don't believe, and Tim or anybody else, correct me if I'm wrong, I don't think in any of our previous drafts anyone has ever thought to use the great comic book group, the Thieves Guild of Nolans.
Oh, yeah.
No doubt.
And I very much appreciated that.
Well, full disclosure, for this series, I really have to thank Russell Sellers for Outlaw Bayou. I think you'd have no Swamp of Thieves if not for Outlaw Bayou. So thanks for that, Russell.
You're welcome. Also, the use of Jonah Hex with Gambit is pretty freaking brilliant, and I wish I'd thought of it.
Well, hey, the use of Jonah Hex with Swamp Thing was pretty cool.
Yes.
Yeah, that was a fun one, but I just love this idea of Gambit and like a Gambit versus Jonah Hex kind of thing. Yeah, that's a good idea. That just has money written on it to me.
And a recurring issue that I think has popped up for many people in real life that you want to speak sometimes to social issues, and I think or at least medical issues, and I think things that burn at the touch of Man Thing was a great step in that direction.
Well, I appreciate that. Thanks again.
Burns at the touch of your Man Thing.
Hey, it's the gimmick. You know, you can't fight the gimmick.
No, the gimmicks are all over this book, and they are wonderful.
Tremendous work, as always, Mr. Capel, on our draft.
Does anybody else have any more questions for Tim?
I can't wait for next time, Tim.
Hearing none. Actually, Todd, I'm gonna close with this question, Tim. Tim, you have you've made it very clear your desire to no longer do this. You've said that you set out to make an outright mockery of the process and of this proceeding. What are the odds you'll be back for the next draft, despite all that?
I'm gonna guess probably pretty certain, unless I get fired by the winner.
And what are your thoughts on that?
I think my thoughts are that if called upon, I will do this again. But I don't know. It seems pretty touch and go here. I certainly think that our winner Todd is going to require me to do this once again.
Oh,
see, I was going to say, I think your only true out is to actually suck it up and win.
Well. That's information I don't have. So.
Who has that information?
What an excellent segue, because we have reached that moment that the six of you have all been waiting for. We are going to dive into some of the results here. And before I read off some of the results, both overall and for individual titles, I wanted to remind people we got 25 ballots in. People were allowed to submit ballots of between 12 and 15 titles. Of those 25 ballots, 16 people submitted a full 15, 4 submitted 14, 1 person submitted a ballot of 13, and I believe he's on this call right now, and 4 people submitted a ballot of just 12, for a total of 357 total polls.
Thank you, also, everybody.
Holy crap.
Seriously, we'll get to all this mushy stuff at the end, but for real, that's an incredible number. 25 people sending in, outside of just us, that's still a lot of people sending in.
18 outside of the people on this podcast.
Which is really a lot more than I was expecting. I think you and Nye and Nick had talked about this, and we were hoping maybe in the 12 to 13 area.
The six of you produced 80 total titles. Of those, 75 of those 80 titles wound up on at least one poll list. So
that's awesome.
Pretty remarkable that, that it was something for everybody, it seemed like. A big variety in terms of what was being pulled. So, with all that being said, let's dive in here to our top 10 individual titles. And actually, it's technically a top 11 because we had some ties here. So, to qualify for the top 10, a book, I'll just go ahead and spoil it for you, needed to be on at least 9 poll lists.
Holy shit.
So, in a tie for 10th, I'll just read these in alphabetical order. First up, from Synchronicity Comics, we have The Age of Gotham, The Killing Joke / Killing the Joker. 9 polls for that book. So congratulations, Todd, for finding your way onto the top 10 titles list. Next up, also tied for 10th with 9 polls, from Quite Frankly Comics, we have BFFs, So congratulations to Greg on that. And finally, rounding out the group that's tied for 10th, from Everything You See and Everything You Don't Comics, Tim Capel, the death-defying Daredevil, had 9 pulls and finishes in a tie for 10th. Moving on to the books that were tied for 6th. These are books that received 10 pulls, again, in alphabetical order. First up, from Roxy Comics, Detective Comics Sleepless, 10 pulls. Congratulations to Jenny.
Mm-hmm.
Moving on, also from Roxy Comics, Lantern's Lust with 10 pulls.
Mm-hmm.
And then finally, from Quite Frankly Comics, Superman Man of Tomorrow with 10 pulls. And then here's a group tied for 3rd. These had 11 pulls. Again, in alphabetical order. First up, from Synchronicity Comics, The Age of Gold, Heroes and Villains. So congratulations to Todd on that. From Everything You See and Everything You Don't Comics, Alias Investigations with 11 pulls. And then finally, from Grimdark Comics with 11 pulls, The Dark Knights. So congratulations to Russell for a high placing. And then finally, our top overall individual title, it came down to a tie between 2 different titles, again in alphabetical order. First up, from Roxy Comics, Cloak and Dagger Separation, 12 pulls. And then finally, from Everything You See and Everything You Don't Comics, Daredevil Red with 12 pulls. So congratulations to Tim and Jenny for taking home our top overall, or our top individual titles.
Nick, I understand that you have the trophies made, and they'll be sent in the mail?
Yes, we will. The check will be in the mail at some point in the near future. We'll have to see when we can get on that. We got to pay our housekeeping bill for the esteemed Ho-Ho Loon first, but we'll get there.
Yes.
All right, and so now it has come. The time has come to reveal our overall final standings. Again, 357 pulls total, so you can use that information to kind of gauge how well you did, I guess, mathematically. We're going to go in reverse order, of course. In 6th place, with 47 total pulls, we have Kid Rando Comics from Mitch Oaken. Mitch, what would you like to say about your placement here in the final standings?
I'd like to blame the following places and people. The South. The South. The North.
Now wait just a minute.
Whoa. You know, Governor, that I'll take no such
as the only Northerner. So, but my second thing to blame is the North, so to be fair. Oliver North. Oliver and Company. Three's Company, Three's a Crowd, Timothy Gilligan Capel, Adam Freakin' Warlock, Prince Adam, that He-Man meme where he sings Four Non-Blondes for 10 hours non-straight, Manny Faces, The Faces, especially Rod Stewart, Ben Morse for Getting My Hopes Up, Benny's Stalkers, Sexism, Racism, The Mexican Caravan, El Guapo and His Plethora of Pinons, The Invisible Sword Man, Tim again for denying that he drafted Adam Warlock in the first place, Pride, but not the Fall, Pride and Prejudice and Zombies in general. Thank you.
That was an outstanding concession speech. I have to give it up to you, Mitch.
Thank you.
That was really... The bar has been set high for concession speeches, so let's see if our 5th place finisher can follow it. With 49 total pulls, edging out Mitch by 2 pulls, 49 to 47, we have Grimdark Comics from Russell Sellers. Russell, how do you feel about your placement here in the final standings?
For all of you who voted for my books, thank you very much. That was kind of you. I'm glad that you guys have good taste. For all of you that didn't, especially a certain person who definitely didn't pull anything from my books, you know who you are. I hope all the bad things in life happen to you and to nobody else but you. Fuck you. Just in case it wasn't clear. And no, I don't care if you kick me off of this from here on out, because you can go fuck yourself all day, every day. Because you know,
shit, I hope you die. Now, that's so a strong follow-up.
I have to put some water in JT Rizzero Mama dish.
Well. you know? I'll allow it. Okay, moving on to our fourth place finisher with 56 total polls. We have Synchronicity Comics and from Todd Weber. Todd, take it away.
Thank you.
Now, we've had two outstanding concession speeches, and that's all we're going to get.
Fair enough.
Yes.
Need some salt, Todd. I'm not. We need Savage Todd to make an appearance here in this concession speech area. Moving on to third place with 59 total polls, edging out Todd by just by three polls for third place. We have Everything You See and Everything You Don't Comics. Tim Capel. Tim, take it away, sir.
Oh, okay. Well, you know, as I alluded to before, no matter the outcome of the popular vote, I was always going to win here. Just, you know, look at where I placed. Just anything ahead of dead last, it validates my thesis that your draft does not matter. This exercise is a fool's errand, and I really just beat you at your own game with the most deliberately atrocious draft picks in recorded history.
I'm sorry, what was his total number?
59 total polls.
And if I'm not mistaken, a full 50% of those are the two Daredevil books.
21 of those 59 are the
okay,
two Daredevil
books. Okay, close.
Statisticians can be removed from the...
nice knowing you folks.
The fact is, look, let's face it, I was just that much better at you guys... At doing what you love so much, yet I so very loathe. Because such is my disdain for all of you. And that, ladies and gentlemen, that triumph is so sublimely, satisfyingly sweet. And all along, I was the ill intent. Was that too much, that last part?
No, that was perfect.
It kind of sounded great. Better. You know, I've been watching a lot of Daredevil. It gets made up more than, like, 50% of my polls, so thought I would work it in.
Outstanding.
There's also a lot of truth to what Tim said, by the way. His disdain...
I'm not much of a liar, so...
His disdain for the draft defied how good his goddamn pitches are every single
right.
time.
Right.
Well, I'll explain why I disagree after you do the top two.
Oh,
hey,
man.
Look, I mean, let's face it. I could sell farts to assholes.
I don't doubt that.
To all of my competitors, you should really take this as a lesson. And it's a teachable moment, you know, for any fellow entrepreneurs out there, like myself, intrepid adventurers or even, you know, like calculated risk takers,
mavericks,
if you will. Spite is such a wonderfully, just powerfully effective motivator. what you want to do is you want to wrap yourself up in that like a warm blanket. I'm telling you, it will never fail you. Just the pettiness, the hatred, the rage. These are tools, and you need to embrace them. You need to allow them to light your way. Don't question if you're doing it for the right reasons and if it's all going to be worth it in the end, because I can assure you it's in the final analysis, it's worth every salty tear.
Another outstanding concession speech. Well done, Tim. Well done. So now we've come to the moment of truth. We have only two competitors are left, so when I reveal the second place finisher, that will tell you everything you need to know. Mm-hmm. Our second place finisher finished with 64 total polls and was one reading of the rules away from that being a total of 78 total polls. But once again, attempts to make the comics draft great again fell by the wayside. Mm. With 64 total polls... Roxy Comics from Jennifer Smith.
What?
Jennifer, take it away.
Well, I took last place, but I called the winner.
Well, there's no way that I can follow Tim's amazing speech, and I agree with everything that he said. if there's anybody else that I would have to lose to, then I'm glad I've lost to the winner here. And, you know, thank you to everybody who voted for my fuck shit junk. I am also pretty stoked to be number two, if I'm being honest, and surprised. So, thank you.
That was far too respectful, and
well,
I don't approve of it. I don't approve of it in the least. Moving on to our winner with a whopping 82 total polls.
80 what?
82. You total polls out of 357, so nearly a quarter of the polls by himself. Quite frankly, comics and Greg Phillips. Greg,
woo!
Take it away, sir.
Abuse of power.
Fire me! I'm already fired. Now this caught me off guard. I was not expecting to win, despite Nick's occasional hints to me that it might be a possibility. I thought he was screwing with me, as he likes to do on frequent occasions. But I would just like to say thank you to all the competitors, all the voters out there for voting for my, my haphazardly created comic book universe. And, folks, listen, nobody gives a shit what that son of a bitch has to say. Oh, way! I used to work at a newspaper. Oh, I haven't mentioned that before. What a son of a bitch. Quite frankly, there's a reason that this book, this title, I don't know what a comic book is. I'll be honest with you. When I was growing up in Oklahoma, we did not have comic books. We had farm work. We had work with our hands. We had to pay our dues in this business.
Shit.
Excuse me, I have something in my sinuses right now. Now, quite frankly, is a name that I created. I don't even know, I don't have any product knowledge, but as you do, when you get an opportunity in this business, in any business, you take time to research the product. I do not know a Booster Gold, I know a Steve Austin. I do not know a Deadpool, I know a The Rock. I do not know Guy Gardner, but I do know Dr. Death Stephen Williams. I also know a Stephen Graham. Now, this is just one example of these. Look at this. Divine Occult. Does it mean anything? Sisterhood of the Bat. More like Sisterhood of My Ass. Superman, the Man of Tomorrow. Last time I checked, Tomorrow wasn't drawing any money. The figures of the past, like the Heartbreak Kid and the Undertaker, were the ones that were drawing money. The Planet. I got nothing to say about that. What in the bluest of green hells is a pumpkin? Now, it's funny you should say that, because I had a preacher in my church who used to tell me there are three things in life. The Father, the Son, and the Danny Hodge. The Pantheon, as I mentioned, is Dan Hodge, Steve Austin, Steve Williams. Pretty simple, folks. The Amazing Spider Twins. You know, there were two twins in my dressing room in Norman, Oklahoma, who made my life better than I had ever felt it before. Future Force is a big pile of shit. Thor, Goddess of Thunder, is a pile of doo-doo. Sully's Angels, well, that sounds pretty damn good, frankly, I like to watch it. The Black Panther, I believe, Hacksaw Butch Reed. Oh. Aquaman, King of Tides, I got nothing. Punisher War, now, Frank Castle doesn't give a shit. If you don't business, you need to go to another business, quite frankly. Passion is the only thing you cannot teach. And Citizen Lex, well, an industrialist, an inventor, a politician, a billionaire, sounds a lot like a guy I used to work for, a guy with a pretty decent mind for this business. That man's name? Vince McMahon, quite frankly. Now, Everybody else on this panel did good work, but quite frankly, there could be only one winner, and I am taking the credit for it. Boomer Sooner!
Well,
what a run-in.
I have no words. There are no words.
I think I soiled myself.
As we have alluded to in previous comments, Greg's victory means that when it comes time next to engage in this fool's errand of an exercise, as Tim Capel has deemed it, Greg will be our...
Do this again.
I'm ready to do it right now.
Oh, God.
Greg will serve as our draft master and you know, MC, master of ceremonies, to oversee the proceedings that will see the return of Ho-Ho-Wow Comics, and thus the crushing of you all beneath my booted heel once more. Mm. Thank you all, sincerely, for participating in this, even if it was against your will in some cases. It's been a lot of fun. I thought the pitches were awesome this year. Probably the best collection of pitches we've ever had, honestly. It was good to have some fresh new talent in there in the form of Mitch, and also to have a fresh new approach in there in the form of Tim. New talent, Jennifer.
Thanks a lot, Steve Willie.
Do I need to check Steve Willie's ballot? Do I need to just start reading ballots on air? Is that what's about to happen?
No, don't do that.
Don't do that? Why not, Jenny?
I'm just saying. Nobody needs to know that.
Well, I think his ballot was fine. It was his lack of participation in this thing that was the problem.
Oh, yeah. If he had participated, Tim wouldn't have been part of it. But we would have been robbed of some of the greatest pitches we've ever seen.
Agreed.
Yeah, well.
That's a fair point. So before we sign off, I'm sorry, Greg, you have something to say?
I wanted to piggyback on what, as I often piggyback off of you anyway, I wanted to piggyback on what you just said and just say genuinely thank you to everyone on this panel. I know I thanked our listeners for participating earlier and thanked them for all the ballots they sent in. Awesome engagement for this. But thank you guys most of all, because this is by far, I know, this is the lamest thing we could possibly do as a human being. But you guys humored us, circled the wagons, came in together, and whether you wanted to participate or you didn't, everybody on the panel put out great work, did awesome pitches, did great creative use of these characters. I was inspired reading these pitches when they finally came in, reading all these great creative ideas that everybody has. We have an awesome crew here at PTB and Comics. And I think these pitches really prove that. And I think the responses that we have gotten from people who have participated in this prove that people are laughing or genuinely engaged or thinking about these pitches and having to cut down from massive lists. I got a couple comments from people saying that they had lists as high as 25 to 30 books that they had to cut from. So everybody did awesome work. And thank you guys so much for participating in the third of these that we hope to do with perhaps even more frequency in the future.
Ah, yes. Tim, what are your thoughts on doing this more often?
More often, you say?
Yes.
Well, I will just say that for all my, you know, my salty words and pettiness, that I impressed even myself with the depths of contempt that I managed to mine and the unfathomable scorn that I feel for all of you. So if you thought this was something, then we're just getting started. The clouds are really gathering overhead, and you know, you're entering my dark passage next time.
Well, we will of course be reaching out to other individuals, and if there is enough interest, Tim, we promise we will take you off the list if that is truly what you desire. But I think you're just putting up a front now. I think you have grown to embrace this, and you secretly love it deep down. But maybe I'm wrong. I don't know.
Let me tell you more about my Shredder King / Vic in headcanon.
Which was awesome, by the way.
Yes, please do. So we will end this podcast, as we do every podcast, with an opportunity for everybody to plug their shit, if there is any. And since we did have, you know, a little bit of a competition here, we'll go in inverse order. And so, Mitch, you will lead off as our last place finisher. Plug your shit. Tell people where they can interact with you if you have anything to plug. I don't know if you do or not.
I actually do. Just also wanted to quickly thank you guys for letting me participate. I did anticipate coming in last place. I wasn't aware of the stuff, but just it was an actual genuine honor, and I am thrilled to be even briefly a member of this place to be nation, so thank you for that. But because of this patch and this scenario, I'd like to think that I have embraced myself into the group a little bit, and I do have something to pitch. Specifically, Mr. Sellers is going to apparently end up on my couch one day as he determines his crisis information. I'll let him give you guys the details, but it'll be an honor to continue my association with you guys in general like that. You can find me on Twitter at Mitch O. It is not Mitch McConnell, Mitch O. And hopefully somewhere down the line, some more appearances.
Outstanding.
Definitely. Russell. I think a drunk comics history may be in your future.
Oh.
I'm always up for it.
As Russell, as our fifth place finisher, plug your shit.
It's true. I'm going to wind up on Mitch's futon, potentially going through his comics collection while he's not home, because I have a terrible habit of doing these things. We'll even record it. After this, you may never see me on Place to Be Nation again. Who knows? That little rant may have finally put the final nail in my coffin. At this point, I almost wish it would. So that's a shoot, brother. So anyway, if you actually feel like bothering with it, DC Post Crisis Management will maybe continue. We'll see. There may be, hey, Mitch, if I get fired, there may be an open spot for you on the Marvel Age podcast, too. So, you know, I don't know what your Marvel history is.
That's not how I would want to go.
But yeah, that's another good show that you can potentially find me on. As far as the rest, who knows? I'm never being invited onto another podcast again. So there we go.
What about Twitter?
I'm sorry.
Yeah, nobody. Yeah, nobody cares. But it's
at, just no selling here.
At Russell _ Sellers, if you give a shit. There you go.
Folks, this is not on the format sheet.
Format?
We.
I wasn't given a format.
This is real. I don't know what else to say. Todd Weber, plug your shit. Illuminating as always. Tim Cable. Plug your.
Okay. So to all the voters who participated in this, I thank you so very much. You know, no longer passive listeners of Place We Nation Pop. You've let your voices be heard, and I salute you. You can also let your voice be heard on my Twitter, which is at Psych68. Look for me as well on the aforementioned Marvel Age podcast. I'm sure we'll have something coming up very soon here in the month of November. And on Place to Be Nation Wrestling, I co-host Survey Says, which is a WCW retrospective. Got a fun episode, somewhat topical for the month of November as well. I will be participating in another project, let's say, on Place to Be Nation Pop to help get something off the ground. It's really not mine to talk about, so that's all I will say about that. You'll know it when you see it. And that's about all.
Outstanding. Jenny is our second place finisher. Plug your shit.
I have so much shit to plug. Let's see. You can find me on Twitter at Jenny Cruz, CRUZ2814. And I am at Geek and Sassy. You can listen to Geek and Sassy. You can listen to Freak Out Drive-In. You can listen to Talking Pop with me and Tim Capel.
I didn't forget. I just wanted you to do the honors.
I know, baby. I've been a guest on everything. On Place to Be Nation, so just pick a podcast and I'm probably on.
Outstanding. Greg, as the champion, plug your, and by proxy, my shit.
This, my shit. So, every week here at Place to Be Nation, you can catch us on the Hard Traveling Fanboys, longest running weekly episodic comic book podcast. in all of Place to Be Nation. Thanks, Nick.
I'm distracted.
Also, I can be found in the where else? On episode 2 of DC Post-Crisis Management, where Mr. Sellers crashed on my couch to discuss Zero Hour, A Crisis in Time, which was certainly an adventurous story in its day, involving some rather unusual face swapping and whatnots. And in addition to that, I recently recorded an episode of Geek and Sassy that will be dropping at some point.
Mm-hmm.
And apparently will be on Talk and Pop at some point in the future as well. So,
or in the past, depending.
Or in the past. Oh, gosh. Dang it, Nick. You're right. In the recent past. So, in other events, I shall also be potentially hosting another podcast that will only be like a really short one with Todd and Tim about a 90s phenomenon that we all took part in.
Oh, yes. That's not what I was alluding to, by the way.
What the shit is happening? There's like podcasts I don't know about.
You can't be on all of them, Jenny. People are allowed to
have podcasts. I need to know, though.
I need to
God
know.
God damn it.
I think Brad is the only one that needs to know. You are not the arbiter of Place to Be Nation Pop.
It's not a huge secret. We'll tell you off list.
Thank you. That's all I need to hear.
FOMO. In any event.
Oh, I have one more thing. If we're not finished here, not to plug, but I just wanted to again thank everyone for coming on. I pulled stuff from everybody's comics companies. Everybody had good stuff here from top to bottom. I'm just looking through some of the ones that stood out to me. Unless you had something planned, Nick, for such an occasion.
I don't know what you're referring to, but sure, go ahead.
I was just gonna say some of my favorite pitches from the company Lanterns Lust. My favorite from Roxy. Loved it. I liked Age of Gold Heroes and Villains, I think, the most from Synchronicity. Tough call here. I had Scarlet Speedsters, Green Lantern Corps, and Brave and the Bold, but I think my favorite was probably Brave and the Bold because Starman and Thor was a cool idea. Challengers of the Fantastic was a good one, but actually, Matter Eater Lad was my favorite from Mitch. Really good stuff. And of course, I have to give love to Swamp of Teeves. What a truly an inspired idea, in my opinion, anyway. So
after your own heart.
Exactly.
Friend. All right. Does anybody else want to participate in Greg's game he just started after we got finished pitching our shit and getting ready for the sign-off? Or, you know, whichever. Anybody?
Good Lord!
I'll be afraid.
Hearing none. We hope you've enjoyed this podcast. I have both enjoyed it and dreaded it at various times. I don't know what else to say.
You have only yourself to blame. Wasn't this your idea?
I am the creator, yes. I did pitch.
You are the creator.
Oh, God. And much like Ultron, my creation has turned upon me, it seems. Well, folks, bye. We're out. Thank you. Pair of sweatpants and a sweatshirt. Go take a 2-mile jog and then come back and see him when she was done.
I believe it was quite sudden and thank you.
Our traveling fanboys.